This is not about revenge.
Liar!
This is about saving the future of humanity!
Jean-Luc, blow up the damn ship!
No! No!
Exchange Studio, deep within the broadcasting multiplex of CBS Radio. This is the Rick Emerson Show.
Indeed it is. You know, it's weird sometimes you mimic those lines for so long and you go listen back to them and you realize that over the years you have just written over them in your own head with big day-glow crayons over and over and over again until your own interpretation and recitation of those lines is so exaggerated beyond the reality. Because when he says, the line must be drawn here and no further. Of course, but no one says it that way anymore. And by no one, I mean Aaron and I don't say it that way anymore. Whenever Aaron and I recite it, it's a here, no further! You know, it's like I'm standing on top of a mountain like Ronnie James Dio with a wailing harpoon in my hand. nerds. Why, hello, it's 3 minutes and 18 seconds after the hour of 11, and it's the month of July, the year of our Lord, 2007. Thank you for coming along, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed and Borg-free studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio. This, my friends, is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. I am he. Thank you for coming by. All right, it is Wednesday, and welcome to Day 12. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970, if you'd like to, interface with us in some sort of fashion about some sort of a thing. It's 503-733-2970 with your comments, your clarifications, your kvetches, your 2 cents, your what have you. Scotty is waiting to sort and sieve through your trifling comments and pass them all along our way, giving them only the barest rudiments of a once-over. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. And if you want to email us, you can do that as well. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Somebody suggested another fabulous movie speech. Fabulous. Another fabulous movie speech. I'm going to write it down. Let's see. Maybe I'll do it tomorrow. Excellent. Well done, Jim. All right, it's 503-733-2970. You want to email us, it's rick@rickemerson.com. Sarah with an H at 970.am, Tim at 970.am, or Sergey at 970.am. And again, our phone number is 503-733-2970. We're running, well, by we, I mean me. And I'm not running that late. I got everything done except for this little, but one section of my, I don't know if I showed any of these at the listener party, but I have this legal pad I keep in front of me, which I hold on to like some sort of a ship's rudder, desperately trying to keep a hold of whatever it is that I was planning on doing on any given day. Doesn't really ever work that way, but I sort of lie to myself and pretend that I've got the show scripted out. Doesn't really, you know, so I can sort of deceive myself into thinking that I've got some kind of a plan. I really don't. But I do write down just sort of an overview of what we're going to try to get to in the show just so I can sort of list it off, and I got everything done but that. All I got written down was int of the intro. That's all I got, INT. So apparently we're going to be doing that. We will talk to Lisa Goddard today. Lisa Goddard is here. Apparently we are now living in, it is or has always been, Larry Flint's world. The living in Larry Flint's pornocracy continues, I guess. So I guess this guy, what's his name? Oh, and she's talking about student loans, too. Did Laura shove that on you? Really exciting story. Like to talk about student loans?
Yeah, she's like, oh, well, you know, this will really identify well with a lot of your audience members.
Yeah. Like anybody, I mean, there's only two schools of people in this audience. People who have already paid their student loans back and people who are never going to pay their student loans back. That's it. Well, apparently, hold the phones. Lisa Goddard's going to be talking about student loans today. You just hold on to your ass, kids, because it's... Maybe she can talk about, like, Keo funds, too. That'd be exciting. She is the one who made the federal deficit sexy, though, or whatever the story that she did a couple years ago. Anyway, so Larry Flynn, I guess. We talked a little bit about this yesterday. What's the guy that some guy, some senator from somewhere or another, got caught sticking it to some call girl? Anyway, so we'll talk about that. I don't care whether she's talking about student loans or that, and we'll talk about that. Did you see that thing that Bush did yesterday when somebody put it directly to Bush, like, when are we leaving in Iraq? When are we leaving? When are we getting out? And Bush's reply was, I'm quoting now, in a little while.
That was terrific.
Oh, fantastic. It's like, you know what the answer is? That's the answer that your dad gives you when he's had one too many the night before and you're trying to get him up on Saturday morning to take you fishing. And your dad, come on, when are we going fishing? In a little while. You know, and he kicks you out of the room and hits the snooze button for the 48th time that day. In a little while. I don't really know that that's an actually accepted military timetable term, but perhaps I'm not as savvy as some. What else? Jim Roop is going to join us to talk about... there's too many serial killers in this country to even keep track of now. I demand that we have to have some sort of tagging system, where they all have to be given zinky nicknames or something, because it's... Like, listen to this. Does this sound like anybody we know? And by we know, I don't mean somebody that we actually know, but I mean... I mean, it probably does sound like somebody we know, but I mean, I don't even know who they're talking about here. A man described by prosecutors as one of Southern California's most prolific serial killers. Not even the most prolific. One of the most prolific.
Oh, and Laura told me that you can use her joke if you want.
Can I? Laura Caviezel from CNN made an observation about this man's a serial killer. What was the joke? I know we're working backward now from the...
I don't even remember.
Something about he liked Wheaties a lot.
He sure did like his Wheaties.
And then there was just like... And when you... And then there was just a whole lot of the... And then did she finally... Did she come... See, he's a serial killer!
Okay.
Get it?
Laura, just book the guest, okay? No.
Serial killer! Ha! Well, whatever. Anyway, he's apparently one of California's most prolific serial killers.
I enjoy your attempts at humor.
He's sentenced to death for the murders of 10 people. Apparently his killing spree, as opposed to a killing jag. His doctor said he wasn't allowed to go on, you know, on jags. Sprees were fine. Spanned 11 years. I don't even know who they're talking about. Anybody? It couldn't be Richard Ramirez. That'd be bigger news. There's too many serial killers to keep track of in this country. They've got to become more interesting somehow. Let's see. Oh, and then Steve Kastenbaum, and we're right in my wheelhouse here. Steve Kastenbaum is going to join us to talk about the Merriam-Webster's Collegiate Dictionary, which is getting its annual updating. I don't care if you find it interesting or not. I'm going to spend like a good 9 minutes talking about it. Doesn't matter to me if you think it's the most tedious thing on earth. I love talking about the dictionary and updates to same. Do you know what word they're putting in the dictionary this year? Who wants to know?
Something high tech.
No, it's not actually. It's the complete opposite of that. They are putting the word... Tim just feigned like his mock I'm a gog expression. Tell me it's not true. They are putting the word... ginormous. In the dictionary this year. So that's what we're going to talk to Steve Kastenbaum about. Like it or lump it. What else? Scotty J is assembling some sort of heat-oriented top five. I don't really know what it is. I haven't seen it. I don't know what's on the list. Could be something good. Could be crap. Doesn't matter. We'll do that later. Because he did this Paris Hilton-themed top five like back when she was still in jail like a year ago. And we never really did it. So we're going to skip that one. And we're just going to go to some heat-oriented top five that he's created for us. What else? Well, that's kind of it. I mean, I got some other observations to make, and we're going to get to... Oh, we have a religious nutcase watch coming up. We have a religious... Starring the Pope. What else? We have a penis watch. Kind of a brutal one, too. I mean, it's still great. Don't get me wrong. It's wonderful. It's just... It'll cause a lot of scrotal clutching out there in the audience. So we'll get to that. Penis watch. Religious nutcase watch. Oh, and we'll talk to Scott. We'll find out how he's... we'll find out how the quest to book Gabe Kaplan on the show is going. All right, 503-733-2970, and of course, mixed in with that, your phone calls, emails, etc. It's 503-733-2970. We're joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. Ow, I just stabbed myself
you
in the palm.
You need to stop doing that with your pen.
Now it looks like I've got stigmata. Fear my stigmata! Hi.
So weird. Hi.
joke for our Catholic friends out there. Catholicism, the only way to salvation. How's your face?
It feels better.
So yesterday was the worst day ever.
Oh, my God. Because
we
in pain.
We never did. We were going to do a little Insta poll of the audience to find out with your septum pierced what day would be the peak of the pain, when it would climax.
Yeah, it seems like that day was yesterday.
It feels
a lot better today. It still kind of hurts when I move it around too much. But
on a scale of, get this idea with the hospital, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the worst pain you've ever experienced, 1 being, where was it?
Yesterday when I was showering, I didn't take a shower, I was washing my face and I hit my nose at the wrong angle. I burst into tears. It is the most painful thing I have ever felt. It was, I just started crying in the shower. I felt like someone took a spike and just like stabbed it in my face.
Tim is moving around.
I felt that chill.
Seriously.
All the way down to my toes.
And I've never had
It was the most intense pain I have ever felt. Ever.
No, like, please to describe it one more time exactly how the accident happened. So you're in the shower.
I was in the shower and I was washing my face and
very gently with like a scrub of some kind.
Yeah, no, I had like my face wash and so I'd like put it on my hands. I was washing, and I forget, and I just brought my hand up and it hit like underneath the underside of my nose and kind of pushed it toward my face. It was blinding. I saw white.
I've had that.
And then
pain.
I cried. Yeah, it was.
And
awful.
The tweeting birds.
Totally little pink elephants around your head. Oh, that sucks.
So that I think that was the low point.
All right.
Today's a little better.
All right. While we're here, see if Dave Zinn answers the phone. He doesn't. It's not really about Dave Zinn.
Hello.
Hi, Dave.
Yes.
That's a strange voice for you to answer the phone in. Is that a voice you use when talking to yourself in a mirror at home? Never mind.
Is this Rick from the future?
Yes, it is. Hey, is our good friend Alan Gabrowski in the building?
I could go round him up for you.
Is it possible for you to have Alan get hook up with us on the phone here, have him call in or something?
No problem.
All right, thank you, my friend.
Just a moment.
All right.
Peace.
Should I stay on the line? I don't know what's going on now.
I don't either.
There's a new glitch in the phone system, by the way, here at CBS Radio Portland. Nothing but the best. Where every time they have to put somebody on hold at the front desk, this echoes through the entire upstairs. Every speaker, every phone on the upper floor of this building, this sound comes in the overhead in your office. And it just stays there until the person answers the phone. So this happens all
throughout
the office.
So we're torturing everybody right now.
Yeah, about 40 times. Yeah, right now, they're hearing this echoing down the hallways and in every office upstairs. About 40 times this morning so far. This is a test of... This is the sound you used to hear before the satellite feed would begin for some show. The Dr. Joy Brown Show. Coming down in 3 seconds. There's a long way to go for a piercing story.
You can talk about his small Asian women that look like boys story as well.
Not Dave Zinn.
No, Alan.
You may have noticed you cannot tell how old Asian women are. I have that pearl cream spot. I'm still going to play it. Let me read this real quickly. Rick. I don't even see me. You bought it down. We'll never know.
I'll listen to it in queue.
Oh, is this Alan online? Oh, this is... Okay, thank you. Sorry. Hi, Alan Gabrowski, account executive and salesperson extraordinaire for AM970. Hello, sir.
Yes, how are you doing, Rick?
Hi, I'm Dandy. Hey, so Alan and I, we're going to meet, I guess not a prospective, but a client who's going to be doing some advertising with us starting next week, something like that. We'll talk more about them. So Alan and I weren't, just don't even get me started on the car trip, by the way. It had nothing to do with Alan. It was just, I know everybody has their own story of how hot it was.
Is it
going to
be about the heat? Good Lord.
It's not really about the heat as it is about my stupidity.
Not the humidity?
So it's not the heat so much as it is the stupidity. But on the way, Alan was telling me a great piercing story. Alan, please now to be sharing your piercing story with us.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, so I was about 19. My girlfriend was, why don't you get your tongue pierced? I'll pay for it. It'll be fine. So she talked me into it. So I went down to the piercing place. I had a big, like, probably 300-pound, bald-headed guy with a goatee covered in, like, sleeves of tattoos. Just grabs my tongue with a salvatong and tops the freaking ring in my tongue. And so I'm like, okay, great, done. 3 days later, the swelling never went down. It just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Yeah, he pierced it in the wrong spot. So when I went to the doctor to get the tongue ring removed...
Now, why did you go to the doctor to get the tongue ring removed?
because the swelling wouldn't go down. I just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. My whole tongue was basically covering my whole mouth.
And had you tried to take the ring out?
Oh, yeah. I tried in the mirror, trying to get the ring out, but the guy put it on so tight, I couldn't get it unfastened with all the saliva in the mouth. Yeah. So when I went to the doctor, he had to put on latex gloves, and it took him like a good, I don't know, 30 seconds of, like, put all of his muscle into the and turn that little tongue ring to pop it so he could get out of my tongue.
Now, here's the million-dollar question. Did he give you any anesthetic in your tongue before grabbing it and wrenching on it to get that thing off?
No, he did not.
Yeah.
That's what you get.
That's what you like to hear from the doctor. That's what you get, nitwit. All right. Yeah. Excellent, my friend. Thank you so much, Alan.
All right. Have a good day.
There you go. Thank you.
I like that guy.
Alan's great. He really is. And, I don't want to get sidetracked here inside getting sidetracked, but we went to a really cool place, a place that just kind of blew my mind. And they're going to be coming on. They're going to be a sponsor of the show. And we'll talk probably early next week about that. But it's just, this place is unbelievable that I went yesterday. So I don't have time to talk about it now, but that, I don't mean to be teasing it, but we'll talk about that next week. So there you go. It's Alan Gabrowski. All right. Tim Riley is working on the following stories for your edification on this fine Wednesday.
It's going to be at least 100 degrees again today.
Yeah.
The Senate votes against giving U.S. troops longer breaks in Iraq. Godlessness. The Harry Potter movie is finally out.
Fantastic.
It's another round of Hocus Pocus for America's youth. The Blazers buy damaged goods. Their new superstar, Greg Oden, will undergo a tonsillectomy this weekend. And there's still another Brecken brawl. This is a fresh one involving men, their dogs, and their guns on the Clackamas River, which is now described as a day camp for crooks and criminals.
Okay, fantastic. And this is, wait, where?
Clackamas River.
Clackamas, crooks, and criminals, and something around
men, their dogs, and their guns.
All right, excellent. All right, it's 503-733-2970. All that coming up, plus a top five. Steve Kastenbaum coming at the bottom of the hour, talk about the dictionary. Lisa Goddard later on. James Roop will be joining us. Okay, so before we even talk about the heat or the humidity or the stupidity or Scotty, Tim Riley last week was talking about how we were talking about people who had done voice work and animation work. And this god-awful new Chipmunks movie that's coming out with Jason Lee, not doing voice work, but actually appearing in it. He must have had a kid recently. He must have had, he must have reproduced. Because that's usually what, if you're successful, like if you're an actor, and you've made good films, you're successful, you know, you did. Because, I mean, he's had his share of hits. I mean, you know, he was in Almost Famous. He was in, he's also a Banky from Chasing Amy. He'll always be that guy to me. And he's on My Name is Earl, which, not like groundbreaking, but which is a good quality sitcom. I mean, that's a good quality, worth its weight sitcom. And yet he's doing this Alvin and the Chipmunks movie with bad CGI, like, gangster chipmunks. Just looks retarded. So you know he must have
a kid.
Of course. Is the kid new? Is the kid recent?
Let me see.
No time to return it. Because, I mean, that's always what causes this. That's what killed off Eddie Murphy's career. That's what killed Robin Williams' career. It's a whole lot of, well, I want to do something that my kids can go see me in. Yeah, well, so for 4 years ago. So that's right around.
Four-year-old, right, and they're starting to talk. And
yeah,
like chipmunk.
Totally. And 4-year-old, and that's old enough to start realizing when the daddy is on the screen sometimes. 4 years old is when they start making, I think, conscious decisions to watch things. That's when they start saying, like, can you put in Shrek 9 for the millionth time? Or whatever. That's totally what it is. So that is why he's making the Chipmunks movie. You can absolutely tell. Well, I told you that David Mamet, only one of the greatest authors of our time, his new movie is called Joan of Bark. It's like some hideous. I mean, he wrote Glengarry Glen Ross. He wrote Wag the Dog, State in Maine, Oleana, Sexual Perversity in Chicago. Goddamn Joan of Bark. Anyway. So we were talking about people doing animation and voice work because I don't fault anybody for doing voice work. That's the easiest money you will ever make. I mean, Sarah and I, when we were unemployed the last time, Sarah and I went and did some retarded like phone messages for some company. Like, hi, while you're on hold, buy a baseball bat from what it was from some sporting goods company. Doesn't matter. You know, I'll do that till the cows come home. That is, go sit in a room, half an hour, read some crap, a check comes in the mail.
$150 an hour.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like when Bill Murray did Garfield and Garfield 2. I have no problem with that. You go, you do a couple days worth of work, huge-ass check arrives in the mail. So I have no problem with that. Tim Riley then opined that he knew this to be true because you had done voice work on a Japanese, like an anime show.
Yes.
And You, I think, had given us, I think you got the name of the show wrong because somebody tracked it down. Was the program that you did the voice work for, Tim, Maple Town Stories?
No. It was the Maple Woods.
The Maple Woods. Is that Maple Woods all one word?
I believe so, yes. It was on the Family Channel.
Now, does this sound familiar? Well, let's just leave the name of this out. Here's a description of the program I'm trying to find. Because the idea of, like, now, of an anime character opening its mouth and speaking like Tim Riley is enough to entertain me. I mean, without the aid of pharmaceuticals.
The only time I saw it was when they disconnected my cable and I had to go in to pay the bill. And here it is on the big screen as I'm standing in line to pay for my cable that's just been disconnected.
As you're waiting, as you're in there signing up for your unemployment benefits, it's on one of the televisions they're using to keep the children occupied.
Yeah. Yeah, a friend of mine went with me and goes, "That bear sounds just like you." Why, that is me. I'll never see it because I don't have cable anymore. That was the one time I've ever seen my work.
So you voiced a bear. Now, there is a bear in this. So these
were several bears.
These were anthropomorphic animals. These were not humans in this
correct
cartoon. Now, does this sound familiar? It's about friendship, adventure, and the troubles that Patty Rabbit, Bobby Bear, and Fanny Fox fall into. Did you voice a character named Bobby Bear?
I don't remember the bear's name.
Wild Wolf is a homeless thief who lives in the forest and steals from the town, but the kids are always there to stop him and set things right and make him understand the wrongs of his ways. Hmm. Does this sound familiar at all?
It sounds kind of familiar. Could have been it.
Did you only do one episode or a recurring role?
I did three episodes.
Okay, there are 52 episodes we would have to sort through for this.
Yeah.
I'm looking here at the list of the English cast. For whatever this was called, but the Maple Town Stories is what they call this here. Barbara Goodson as Bobby Bear. Reba West as Patty Rabbit. Susan Roman as Bobby Bear. Katie Griffin as Baby Bunny. Janice Adams as Mrs. Maple. Was there a Mrs. Maple?
I think so, yes.
So, see, this might, in fact, be the show. It was on Nickelodeon.
Oh, it was on Nickelodeon? It was on the Family Channel.
Oh, well.
Back when I did it.
Now it's going to haunt me forever.
I was a purple bear.
What year would this have been?
Oh, this would have been...
A purple bear.
1990 or 91.
Did your bear have any other distinguishing traits? Did he have, like, sunglasses or a bandana or something?
No, I was just happy to make it through because I had a tough time getting the words into this bear's mouth when it's still flapping when I'm all done talking. I had to go back. Maybe that's why I only did three episodes. It was rough.
And it's like all of those anime shows where you finish what you're saying and the character's mouth keeps bumping for like another 10 seconds.
Exactly. It was horrible.
Yes, I'd love lunch.
And I'm thinking on my way out, I'll never be called back in again today. And sure enough, I was right. There's no way that English words can be stretched out into the mouths of Japanese characters.
It's impossible.
I tried. I was
speaking
there
really slowly.
I was there several days. I could not make it work. So I don't know if the dialogue was rewritten afterwards.
Now, when you're doing this animation work,
it's a big screen.
Do they show you the screen in front of you? And is it like when you do looping where you have the script in front of you?
The mouth is moving, and you're fitting words in while the mouth is moving. You're the only one in the studio.
We're attempting to. Some minimum wage guy running Pro Tools on the other side of the other side of the counter.
No, this was Saban Productions before it became big with the Power Rangers.
Uh-huh.
It was just in a little studio on Ventura Boulevard in Studio City. So if it helps, it was a Saban production.
All right. Is that S-A-B-A-N?
Yeah, they're big.
All right. We'll keep looking. All right, it's 503-733-7970.
But it did have bears then.
It had bears.
This
that
has to be it, then.
But it was called the Maplewoods back then.
I mean, there's a bear in this, and there's maple in the title. And it doesn't say, like, alias. Well, this is from some anime enthusiast. So
if we could research that and see if it was a Saban production. Well, it was a Saban import.
All right. Well,
for all you geeks out there.
Was ABC. Let's see, the broadcaster was Asahi.
Did you work with a guy named Satoko Yamano? No, probably not.
No, I worked with some big burly guy who was an American.
Some guy named Chet. All right. We probably have to
try it again. Try it again.
Yeah, why don't we going to roll that back and try that again?
Exactly.
All right. Take 58.
Yeah. I've heard that voice.
Oh, it seems like yesterday. I'm destroying my career in this industry. I'm so lucky I have a minimum wage radio job to go to after this.
I just remember sitting in this recording booth with Sarah while she was talking about a softball bat, and she just kept trying to use the phrase, check out this shaft and its ball launching action. Without descending into giggles. And
that's what you keep repeating in your head. You're getting paid for this.
Seriously, $150 an hour. Don't blow it.
Yeah, and you got yours down pat, and I had to keep saying, yep.
And while you're doing this, you're seeing mansions someday. All I need is a few more of these, and I'm all set.
Seriously, I'm picturing that, like, the WB is going to call me to replace the Inner World guy, but that never happens. Go back home and stare out the window and watch people with jobs go to work.
And you return to your car and you got a parking ticket.
All right.
We have this break. Is the beginning of an illustrious career. They'll never call me back again, and I know it.
All right. Steve Kostenbaum around the corner. Don't go anywhere. Hi, hello, it's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Coming up later on, Lisa Goddard, James Roop, the new news hour. Today's top five and more stories of comedy. It's 503-733-2970. Let's now welcome from the city that never sleeps, New York City, the one, the only CNN Radio correspondent, Steve Kostenbaum. Hello, sir.
How's it going?
How are things, my friend? How's life in New York?
Doing good. Doing good. Can't complain.
All right. It was, it was just hotter than blazes, as they say, here yesterday. But, I mean, you guys, in New York, you guys have just got to, like, buckle down probably early on and you just get used to it, right? You just shake it off New York style. You guys don't get rattled very easily out there.
Yeah, although it's really not fun when you're dripping after every step. This morning when I woke up, the humidity was 87%.
That sucks.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, just as a side note, because I haven't watched it yet, but there's this miniseries on ESPN with John Turturro called The Bronx is Burning, all about, he plays Billy Martin, and it takes place, I think, during what Spike Lee later termed the Summer of Sam. I don't really know this, but you're probably not old enough to remember that. It was probably, before your time, or you were real young when that was happening?
I was nine, but I do remember the blackout that year. That's a great book, The Bronx is Burning. The miniseries makes it seem as though they're going to focus more in on the drama that was going on with the Yankees that year and with Billy Martin and with Reggie Jackson. But the whole book revolves around three different things going on sort of simultaneously that year. The Yankees drama, what was going on with the Son of Sam murders, and then this blackout.
Right.
That happened, and parts of Brooklyn and the Bronx just went up and completely in flames.
And so I didn't even see, and this is how out of the loop I am, I didn't even know that there was a book about it. Is it recent, or is it to come out a long time ago?
A couple of years ago. Right. It's a great read. It's one of those ones that, you'll get done in a night or two.
Well, that's, I love books that sort of capture slices of American history or specific flashpoints, those moments where it is usually things that happen over a couple days or things that happen over a week in a certain period of time, in a certain place in the country or in the world, things that are sort of real dividing lines in the culture. The Bronx is Burning. I'll pick that. I'm about to finish the book I'm reading now, and I'm going to be needing something else. So there you go. The Bronx is Burning.
It's a great book, and it comes from a line that I think it was Howard Cosell said during the World Series that year, when the cameras at Yankee Stadium panned over to a building, I think it was a school building, that was on fire in the Bronx. And this was, after the city had gone through this horrible blackout.
Sure.
and all this destruction. And Howard Cosell, ladies and gentlemen, the Bronx is burning.
Oh, I miss that guy. That guy was fantastic.
Yeah, he was.
You know, I saw just, now that we're just becoming old guys talking about sports, you know how it was that they just inducted Don Meredith into, what is it, the Sports Broadcasters Hall of Fame or something yesterday? Some Hall of Fame I didn't even know existed. And they showed a picture of that guy from back in the glory days of Monday Night Football. Looked like he was about 12 years old. He's one of those guys that you kind of just it's easy to sort of forget that how huge he was and how influential that guy was, not unlike Howard Cosell.
Right.
You go a long time, you don't even really think about him because he's not around anymore, not in front of a camera, you know, and you just forget about the huge shadow, just the massive looming influence that even a guy like me, and I'm not a big sports fan, those guys still cast. So, all right, Bronx is Burning. It's right now, it's on my TiVo right now. I know it's a miniseries. I haven't watched it yet. So what I might actually do is, based on your recommendation, I might actually read the book first and then go back and watch these episodes that are piling up on my TiVo. Fantastic. All right. Well, there's two things that I wanted to get to here, one of which is way more interesting than the other, but I do find this story from a couple years ago kind of fascinating. I don't remember people remember seeing this footage on television, but in 2003... And this is a thing that I'm amazed more people don't remember. I'm amazed this wasn't a bigger story. Where this pizza delivery guy was kidnapped, and then these guys wanted to rob a bank, I guess, and so they kidnapped some pizza delivery guy. I'm probably getting the details out of order here. And then they put this weird, like, Demolition Man-like collar around his neck that was rigged with explosives.
Yeah,
and then they sent him into a bank with this collar around his neck that was fitted to blow up, and he was just like some poor pizza guy.
Well, check this out. The news conference is literally going on right now as we speak, and I was listening in while I was waiting to come on the air with you, and they just announced the indictments against these two people who are already behind bars on other charges, convicted of murder and some other stuff. And the U.S. attorney there in Erie, Pennsylvania, just announced that he was a willing participant at some point in this plot, that he wasn't a true victim here. His role may have changed over time, but they believe that he was part of this whole plot. And the idea of putting this bomb around his neck was to throw police off the track. As the U.S. attorney put it, it was a ruse.
So this pizza guy was like, all right, rig me with this collar bomb. I'll walk into the bank and I'll make it look like I'm a patsy, like I'm a victim.
Exactly. So this way, if he got caught, the whole idea was, you know, the cops would, you know, they wouldn't be able to trace him back to them as part of the co-conspirators. But the U.S. attorney just, you know, sort of implied that, you know, at some point his role in this may have changed and he may have become an unwilling participant or something like that. You know, towards the end there, but she wasn't exactly clear about that. But she did make it very clear and certain beyond any doubt that he knew these folks and that, you know, he was in on the planning.
Because the thing exploded at some point, right? The thing went off. I don't know if he was still in the bank or...
He was actually, you know, they keep showing the footage on CNN and on other stations as well where the cops were surrounding him, but they were standing a good 50, 100 feet away and had their weapons drawn, and he was handcuffed and sitting on the asphalt, and they were waiting for the bomb squad to arrive. And they always cut the video right up to the moment before the bomb exploded. And it's out there. I mean, you can find it on the Internet, obviously, because you can find every disgusting, you know, horrible scene on the Internet these days. So And I can't watch it. But the some TV stations were actually kept carrying it live when it happened, and the bomb exploded and tore him to pieces.
Let me just say, and I know that there are things that fascinate me that maybe don't fascinate most people, and I don't mean that in a morbid sense, but I mean there are small little social phenomenon, little ripples in the culture sometimes that fascinate me, mm-hmm. that I fixate on, and I always, when you talk about this guy, and I know we're running over time here, but when you talk about... that guy, some of the news stations were carrying it live when this bomb collar he had around it that just went off. Things like that, just little fragments of time that just get captured on television like that really fascinate me. There's a whole phenomenon about this guy, Bud Dwyer. I don't know if you remember Bud Dwyer. It was in Pennsylvania, I believe, and I could be wrong about that. I'm probably getting it wrong right now.
You're right, yeah.
In Pennsylvania, and he was a politician in Pennsylvania that he was accused of graft and bribery or whatever. So he calls this press conference to announce, you know, hey, here's the deal. And I don't know if he was calling to announce his resignation or whatever, but he calls this press conference live on television. He does and this is all out there on the Internet. He does this press conference. He hands out a bunch of envelopes. This is all live on the news. Hands out a bunch of envelopes to his staff that are there. The whole time he's carrying this manila envelope in his hand. And then he says, and so I'd like to thank my staff for standing by me. And he hands them envelopes while they're there at this press conference that the press is covering. And he's got this manila envelope, and he goes, so thanks, and I appreciate it. And now, and then he reaches in and just pulls out this freaking .357.
Yep.
Puts his hand up to the camera guy who's, like, charging him, and he says, stay back, this will hurt someone. And then just blows himself away right there on camera.
Yeah.
And the camera guy, for good or bad, people can think of this what they will, keeps his composure and keeps the tight shot on him as he, like, dies right there on the camera. And most of the television stations didn't cut it or didn't air it. They cut away when they knew it was happening, or they taped it and didn't broadcast it. But there was this single television station that was carrying that event live. And by just some complete confluence of events, it also happened to be a snow day. And so there were all, and it was like at noon, and so there were all of these kids throughout Pennsylvania that the luck of the draw is that X number of them were sitting there like flipping around on television, watching television, and they see this guy shoot himself on TV. And you got to wonder, like, how that is sort of affects people. It's just sort of a weird ripple in the culture. Stuff like this that just gets out there into the ether. And you got to wonder how it sort of... how it plays out in the minds of people over time. It's a weird phenomenon.
Talk about post-traumatic stress syndrome. You go there to cover a news conference, and then some guy takes his life right in front of you.
Seriously. I hate to do this. I apologize. Are you going to be on tomorrow? Because I know that we're hearing a beep on the other end, and I know we're butting up against our time with Lisa here. Are you going to be on the clock tomorrow?
Yes, I will.
Okay. Is it cool with you if I sort of delay this dictionary thing till tomorrow? Because I don't want to rush through it.
Absolutely. We can definitely go over all the words. They only release one-fifth of the words to the public. They're keeping the suspense there.
All right.
So, yeah, we can talk about it.
All right. We will talk about this tomorrow with you, my friend. So enjoy the rest of your New York afternoon. Stay cool. We'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Thanks a lot.
There you go. Steve Kastenbaum, ladies and gentlemen, in New York City. Yeah, we'll do the dictionary thing tomorrow. He was talking about this bomb collar guy, and it totally just... Yeah, that whole Bud Dwyer thing is really freaky. Just, it's a train, and every so often... that Filter song, that Hey Man, Nice Shot by Filter, is about that guy. And I'm not, and I know that band is from, some of the guys in that band are from Pennsylvania and are at the right age to have witnessed that whole thing on television. I always wonder if they did or not. It's just, it's one of those weird things that escapes through a crack into the culture and then it's just out there. And you don't really know the ramifications of that until like 10, 15, 20 years later. It's just freaky. Yeah, don't go Googling that. It's all kinds of wrong. All right, what are we doing here? Is this Lisa? All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Radio Program from the Hill. CNN Radio correspondent to the stars, Lisa Goddard. Why, hello there.
Jeez, it's just a revolving door of CNN correspondents.
Well, it's totally my fault. We booked Steve at 11:30 to talk about the Merriam-Webster's Collegiate Dictionary update, which is a fascinating topic to me. And then I swear to God, here's where the conversation went. The conversation went from John Turturro to Dandy Don Meredith to Howard Cosell to the Bronx to this bomb collar explosion guy with that pizza guy to then talking about Bud Dwyer, who was that Pennsylvania politician who committed suicide on camera years ago. Oh. And it's just this whole weird, and you know what? I don't even really know how we got from one to the other, but it all seemed to follow this gradual progression that took us completely off the beaten path into some tangled Cambodia of conversational undergrowth.
Wow. I just want to sit back and listen to the replay.
No, there's just stuff that I find strangely fixating and fascinating. And there are these conversational landmines out there, and if you step onto one of them, I will just completely go off on a tangent and do some 12-minute side note about something that has nothing to do with anything. So... You know, what are you going to do? All right. Don't even get me started on...
It's a challenge. Like, I'm now in my mind, I'm, doing the asteroids game. Like, I'm hunting, actually, for the asteroids.
Don't even get me started on V.C. Andrews novels. Man, I'll talk for like an hour on those things. All right. Okay, I'm just going to stop here.
Yes?
I am going to stop.
All right,
I'm going to take a breath.
I had an idea, but yeah, go for it.
I mean, you're free to if you want. I'm just saying, I'm as a service to you... I'm trying to center myself.
I feel it. Well, I guess.
Okay. I know that this is technically not something you were talking about today, but I know Dickie Uliana was talking about it, and you and I briefly discussed it.
We're really the same, right?
Yesterday. I'm not trying to imply that. I'm just saying you guys cover a lot of the same beat.
Right, we do. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
We are sort of living in Larry Flynt's pornocracy at this point. So this is, and what is the guy's name?
David Vitter.
And we talked about this about him yesterday. His phone number turned up as a client of the DC Madam. He apparently has copped to this, and he's like, my wife has forgiven me, even though his wife in the Monica Lewinsky era was saying that she would never forgive her husband if he were to do that.
Right.
Is this something that, and Larry Flint, I guess, is kind of claiming credit for this. Is that accurate? Was the journalist who discovered this working for Larry Flint?
Now, I don't know if he was full-time on the staff of Larry Flint, but he did give it to Larry Flint. And then Larry Flint was the one who, I think, had the rights. And it is, I think Larry Flint was trying to search through these records and find some connection to someone like David Vitter.
And so I guess he is.
So, I don't know exactly how long this guy had worked for Flint or what their relationship was specifically.
So he is the, I guess he's the first, and who knows if this is going to be some sort of an ongoing thing. I do get little flashbacks, though, to the Bob Livingston era. And, you know, during the, in fact, one of your colleagues, Jeffrey Toobin, who was CNN, is or was CNN's legal analyst for a long time.
It is, right? Although, you know, Jeff Greenfield, by the way, you asked, he showed up on a CBS Sunday Morning.
Really?
Last week, so there you go. But yeah, Jeff Toobin.
Jeffrey Toobin wrote this fantastic book called A Vast Conspiracy, which is, to my mind, the definitive documentation of the impeachment saga of William Jefferson Clinton. And, he talked about, he had the greatest phrase when he talked about Larry Flint sort of unleashing this attack on the Congress and saying, I'll give you $1 million if you can prove you were bonking a congressperson. And that as soon as Larry Flint started revealing these things and people started stepping down and presumptive speakers of the House suddenly started stepping down, there was this sense of national vertigo of just events beginning to spin a little out of control. And, you know, that kind of thing fascinates me. So every time a story like this comes out, you always do wonder, that's the tip. You always do wonder how much lies beneath the surface and how much, you know, what kind of back channel phone calls and correspondence and whispered conversations are happening right now between who.
Right. Well, so, in that sort of there's 50 guys in charge of the whole universe kind of way.
Yeah.
You know, Bob Livingston, when he stepped down, it was David Vitter who took that seat.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
That's how David Vitter got into Congress. He was
in
the House to replace Bob Livingston.
I feel like a fool for not knowing that. What?
Yeah, I was waiting. I was like, oh, wait, this punchline, it's coming. But how crazy is that?
I had no idea. Well, that's a great
even
little...
Even so. And now we know that David Vitter not only apparently had some sort of relationship here in Washington with this escort service, but now a very well-known New Orleans madam is also telling stations, and she's also well known for not divulging really who her clients were, but she's now going on camera saying, yes, David Vitter came by and saw my girls all the time.
Now, see, that was the other thing, and I know that this sounds strange to people, but I am sort of offended on some level that these madams or whatever you want to, you know, these women who run these sort of services, I am sort of, I mean, I guess madam is the preferred, I don't want to say pimp, because that just sounds too crass, but I mean, I guess a madam is the term that you use for this.
I guess so, right?
It does sort of offend me on some weird sort of, I don't want to say romantic, but it does offend me on some sort of, I guess some sort of melodramatic level that they would reveal all this, because I guess that's part of the, I always thought that was part of the unspoken code, is that you know that they didn't reveal their clientele. They, like Sidney Biddle Barrow style, they just kind of kept it secret.
Well, it makes more sense for, you know, the D.C. madam, because she was, you know, who said, you know, you want to see someone who sticks to their code no matter what, but
right.
She did have, you know, she was going to court, and she was facing the hoosegow, and she needed to raise some money. You know, now in New Orleans, I don't know what's going on with that, but I understand where you're coming from.
I just find the whole thing fascinating. I really do.
Yes. David Vitter not also missed another vote today. Not around.
just hanging out at home.
I guess so. I'm not sure.
Sitting there in his bunny slippers wondering what he's going to do next. is it true that in Ohio yesterday, George W. Bush said, quote, we're going to pull out of Iraq in a little while?
I listened to that speech, and I remember him saying something like that, but I don't remember those exact words.
I may be paraphrasing everything.
Is that getting picked up a lot?
Well, Drudge, and I think the headline has subsequently changed, but Drudge, who on certain things is, you know that he doesn't run certain things unless he's kind of, you know, got it, but he put it in direct quotes, and it was, I think, a link to some other, yeah, I don't know if it was an internal story, I think it was a link to some external story like a Washington Post piece or whatever, but George Bush said something very close to, we will be leaving Iraq, quote, in a little while. And, I mean, it just, that just seems like such an off-the-cuff, flip, completely vague non-answer that you think at this point his people would just be telling him not to say anything. And so my question is on the subject of Iraq, because I think yesterday we heard that 62% of Americans now think that Iraq was a mistake. His approval rating is below the, it's like below the fruit cellar. It's in 29%, according to this poll yesterday. My question is, it seems so strange that, I mean, he is effectively, I mean, an objective view of this is that he is just dynamiting the Republican Party from the inside. He has so many defections, both just from the electorate and from, you know, power brokers, politicians within his own party. It is amazing to me that someone has not stepped in even privately and just said, like, you've got to knock this off. Like, this is dry rot from the inside out.
You know, I think, honestly, 7 years into his presidency, I do think at this point George Bush is in charge. You know, and now the question is who influences him and how do they influence him? And I'm sure someone could say, listen, it's not working. Ixnay on the Iraq EA. Well,
yes.
I got
Thank
to
you.
Tangle on that.
Yeah.
But I think that what he says in public is left mostly to him. And I think that they have been telling him to get out and get passionate on Iraq and say, tell the American people why you think our troops should stay. And I think the problem is that he can do really well for a few minutes, and then he'll just kind of take a little, you know, maybe he might build too much confidence, and then he'll just hit that pothole, and sometimes he hits it hard.
I mean, I guess maybe this is the sort of definitive response to people who think, because you and I both know this, if there's any number of people who think that there's a lot of people who think that George Bush is just a puppet president. I mean, I know there's any number of people who feel that it's secretly Karl Rove, or
right,
it's secretly Dick Cheney, or it's the...
Right, and the rise of the Vulcans, right.
Yeah, exactly. It's the Stonecutters or whoever that are really running this, the Trilateral Commission. But, I mean, the fact that he can... In a perverse way, this is almost proof that George Bush really does run the show, right? That he continues to make these decisions that seemingly are doing, maybe if not irreparable, certainly serious harm to his party.
I do think that the way he speaks in public is proof that he is mostly in charge. Although you could make the argument that it's proof that everyone else is sending out their resumes,
they're
getting ready for the next gig.
Yeah, there's some openings on the McCain campaign, I hear.
Zing. That's true.
Fantastic. I think there ought to be a reality show. We'll get this Vitter guy. We'll get the pay. We'll get some. You know, we'll get some of the McCain guys. We'll get Dick Morris, and we'll get that mayor of Villaraigosa from L.A.
Oh yeah, that's fantastic. That'd be nice.
Stick him in a house and put it on the Spice Channel. I'm telling you right there, I'd pay to watch that. So
that would be nice. Maybe Dick Cheney, just throw him in there.
Yeah. Here's just a little side note before we break. I didn't get a chance to talk to Steve Kastenbaum much about this because I got off so much on this Bud Dwyer conversation. But I will say that starting this year, the word ginormous will be in the Merriam-Webster's dictionary. It's a fantastic word.
I assume that's what you guys were talking about. I was talking to some Capitol Police officers about that just today.
Really?
Yeah. Believe me, they're into the dictionary.
You have a life that is different from the lives of most people.
Yeah, I guess that is pretty weird. That's probably the only such conversation in the universe.
You are the only person. Sometimes one can feel small and generic in the universe. Sometimes one can feel that one just vanishes into the vast, bland multitudes. But let me assure you, I don't know a whole lot, but I will guarantee you, you are the only person on planet Earth today discussing the word ginormous with Capitol Hill police officers.
Yes.
You can take that, you know, you can go to sleep tonight content. All right.
I'm happy.
Enjoy the rest of your day, Lisa.
All right. See you, Rick.
There you go. There's Lisa Goddard, ladies and gentlemen, on the Hill. Fantastic. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. People are asking, is there a photo of you with your nose ring up here? You're waiting.
No, I took one with my phone, but for some reason my phone's not letting me send pictures right now.
All right. Okay.
So I will try.
All right. Excellent. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll take a break. Come back. Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. Later on, James Roop will join us on today's Top 5. You stay right there. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Show.
Now it's a little late.
the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen of the Ministry of Truth, it's Tim Riley.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
So it's supposed to be 100 degrees again today, and so far it's only 82 street-level degrees outside our downtown studios.
That's me. That's just me.
You forgot to turn on your microphone? No, that's my job.
My lights work over here.
I do have an on light now.
I'm not going to go on. Now, do you have an off light? Is it?
No.
Well, I guess neither do I. I guess I only have the on light. All right, so I guess the off light, no one cares about this conversation.
Well, on means we're moving forward, and it's all about forward motion.
It's all about picking up and making you feel good, Tim. Yesterday, as I mentioned, I was pedaling to work yesterday, as I did today, to help the children, and which is now, I think, 4 days in a row that I've done that. But about, I don't know, I got to the Hawthorne Bridge, it was about a halfway point of getting here, and I'm like, why do I feel so warm? And then I looked and realized I had wearing my jeans. So I biked to work in my jeans, which is okay, because that was at like 8:30 in the morning when it was just starting to get hot. But of course, then I come into my office, and I can, you know, you do the cool down period when you start to sweat. And so then I'm just like sweating through my jeans, and it's just revolting and disgusting. And then, but to make matters worse, then I had this sales call to go on. I had to go to meet a client, which is fine, but it was at 4 in the afternoon. And I was originally supposed to bike to a place because it's across the Hawthorne Bridge. I'm like, I'll just bike there. But clearly, that's not going to work. It's 102 degrees. And everyone, I tell my story to people, I'm like, I forgot my shorts, I biked to work in my jeans. And everyone,
and they raised the bridge. And they did. No, they didn't.
They did.
That's the other thing,
by the way, is they also raised the bridge. So that tacks 15 minutes onto your morning trip in. But then, I'm like, no one is sympathetic. Everyone just laughs, you know. And Levi's are all thick. It's like those Levi's 501 blues, you know. And they're just all like, they're like an inch thick and like really like keep you warm in winter pants. And so I ended up having to go with the sales guy, you know, which was fine, but no one really likes to ride with a salesperson. So I mean, let's just all speak the truth here. They're fine people, but you wouldn't want your sister to marry one.
No.
And so, I get a ride with Alan, and we go over to the client, and that's great, and that's what they do. And so we're down there, and God, I shouldn't make fun, because God bless him. We're at the client, and I tell Alan, I say, now look, here's the thing. I know we have to get back to the station, we got things to do, but... because we're on Grand yesterday, Grand and like, I don't know, Oak or something. And I tell him, like, on the way back, we have to stop at Ross Dress for Less because I have to buy, I cannot bicycle home in these pants. It's just not going to, and I don't want to take the bus because then you're standing outside there in the sun like a dick waiting for the bus to come along. I don't want to take the station vehicle home or something because then my bike is still going to be here. I don't want to, you know. And so he takes me downtown. And, of course, downtown there's construction. I mean, you're inhaling chalk dust or whatever they dig up in the pavement. And they're pouring hot tar, it seems like. God, those guys who work on a road crew on a day like yesterday, I mean, those guys ought to make like $1,000 an hour. Mm-hmm. So he drops me at Ross Dress for Less. I go in, try to find the least ghetto pair of like, gym shorts I can possibly find, which is a challenge at that place. Because look, and don't get me wrong, I'm not above Ross Dress for Less, clearly. I bought something there yesterday. I've purchased things there in the past. Let's not confuse
I bought my news bag there.
Really?
Yeah.
It's like Marshall's. That's where I bought my Kenneth Cole bag at Marshall's. But let's not you and I confuse it with a place filled with attractive people and stylish wares. It really isn't. So I found him, and of course there's one checker open. You know, and I'm stuck.
Elevator's broken. You got to walk up the stairway past murderers with knives in their pockets.
There seems to be gum everywhere that I step in. So I get to the counter. I'm behind 15 pairs of, like, 16-year-old girls who are snapping gum and talking on their sidekicks and bitching about how their mom won't let them put more on the credit card. And meanwhile, poor Alan is just sitting out there in a zone, you know, in a blocked-off parking space, waiting for a cop to come by, using the last of his gas on the air conditioning as he waits in the sun for me to buy shorts inside a Ross Dress for Less. I mean, it really was like a trip to the Ninth Circle. It was like rowing across the River Styx. And, anyway, so I finally get them, and they're all trashy and whatnot. So at least I did not have to bike home, because I would have died. And that's a thing. You can't do that. You can't just be one of your own Darwin watchers, because it would have been a lot of Emerson, 34, died from heat stroke like a goddamned moron. I mean, that would just be embarrassing. So be talking about me on that Z100 morning show. Oh! Here's Tim Riley.
Hmm. Didn't they just fire that?
Yes, I believe they did, Tim.
Not that I ever listened to it.
I believe there's an opening there.
There are always openings there. Not that anybody would notice.
Sarah's giving me a concerned look. Do you have many friends at Z100?
Oh, no, I didn't hear what morning show it was.
The Z100 morning show, which I didn't know existed until I heard that it was gone.
A local show?
I don't know the answer to that, actually. I'd be amazed if anyone calls to confirm. Apparently it was having some challenges. Oh. And it's local, and they just can't have that. So they just stamp that out at Z100. No, we need somebody in Arizona coming over the ISDN line. Will I do a local show? Well, that's not going to work. Get out. I'm sorry, we shouldn't poke fun. Here's Tim Riley.
So I'll talk about the heat and all the problems it's causing for the citizens of Clackamas County. They just can't behave themselves. Alcohol and high temperatures are a combustible mix for the people of Clackamas County. There's been another large drunken brawl involving about 24 people and their dogs.
Fantastic.
At Riverside Park. One 29-year-old man has been arrested on murder and assault charges.
Oh. One of those things where I just start to laugh.
Attempted murder.
Okay, well, there you go.
They have today to just accomplish something.
Just attempted. He was too tired to go all the way.
So according to the police, we're a day camp for crooks and criminals, which I'm sure the Chamber of Commerce is pleased to hear.
Seriously, can we call Clackamas and ask if we can make that their new slogan? A day camp for crooks and criminals. Just put that on like the city seal right above like a sunrise or something, and then like a bird flying.
Yeah.
Genius.
Well, this latest incident was first reported about 5 o'clock yesterday. Witnesses said two dogs were fighting, and then a brawl spread from the dogs to a crowd of at least 25 people.
So it's like a virus that jumped from canines to humans.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 3 hours after this fight, sheriff's deputies got reports of two separate shootings at the home of Marcus Bayer, one of the people who allegedly took part in the initial dog fight in the park. So this was a continuation of the dog fight.
What is... Oh, goddamn. Seriously, I don't know anything about this guy. I don't know who he is. I know I have no knowledge of this guy, but you know what? But the fact that he was engaging in a dog fight tells you all you need to know about him. All right? I mean, that's it. That's it. Who was it? Who was that?
Well, I'm not sure if this was an organized dog fight.
Well,
or something that the dog got into.
That seems to be a thing that moron criminals are really into. Was it Michael Vick? So Michael Vick, Scotty's a Michael Vick, the football player, that was doing the dog fighting. Yeah, it was in the basement, and they found he was, like, running some dogfighting ring or something. Really, all you need to know about a person can be extrapolated out from that fact. So, but this may have been an unintentional dogfight, perhaps?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
So 3 hours later at 8 o'clock, this fellow's girlfriend comes to get her personal belongings at this guy's house. So she told police that after she left the home, returned to her car, this fellow, Bear, walked outside with a shotgun and fired at her at least twice and missed, thank goodness. Meanwhile, she and her friend arrived at Bayer's house in a tractor. Bayer also fired multiple shots at these people on the tractor. We're talking about Clackamas County here.
Maybe
this is like Deliverance Land. Really,
I haven't been to Clackamas in I don't know a few weeks or I There's guess I don't really
strumming on banjo, sitting in rocking chairs, churning butter.
People with big metal plates in their head. They call it hamburger helper, but it tastes just fine by itself.
So as it turned out, the dogs were okay. But this fellow has been arrested for attempted murder and assault charges.
Apparently shot at his girlfriend. Where did the tractor come into this?
Apparently that's the vehicle that they drive. They arrived at this fellow's house on a tractor. Well, it's a good open-air vehicle for a hot day, I would imagine, given the choice between say, a hot gremlin or something that they might be driving there, or a tractor. Maybe they didn't put gas in the gremlin, so they decided to take the old tractor over. Maybe they're inquiring about the condition of the dogs.
Just picturing some idiot Clackamas women on a tractor that goes 9 miles an hour. Rolling down the street on a 102-degree day. while their equally moronic...
moving vehicle.
Their equally moronic boyfriend is chasing
after
them.
Let me reload my shooting iron.
Sarah,
I think I hear a tractor coming up yonder. If I don't act now, they'll kill all my old Milwaukee.
You stay away from my still. Jesus.
Just another day in the camp for crooks and criminals known as Clackamas County.
Portland's own Florida. That's...
We can go on and on about this.
Seriously, make sure you save that story.
Oh, there are plenty of updates coming in. There'll be more this afternoon. It's another update in Clackamas.
Clackamas Newswire.
Let's bring out the dogs and go to the park.
Oh, my God. On a tractor.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Well, that's the way to travel in Clackamas.
I suppose. When your Impala won't start, you find that John Deere. All right.
And one person was bitten by the dog. So
well, seriously, if you were a dog, wouldn't
living
you
in Clackamas, I'd be very angry.
Wouldn't you be angry at the owners who were keeping you there?
Maybe someday they'll take me on a tractor ride.
It's just fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Do they live on a farm?
Doesn't mention.
I mean, were these just some hee-haw, some Buck Owens types that were just the Clackamas? Clackamas sounds like some sort of discount snack food.
As
they
it should be.
Sell at the Winco out there. Oh, all right, there you go. I wish we could find somebody from the Clackamas City Council, whatever that might be, battered card table in a room somewhere with a sad-looking old woman missing her upper plate. It's like our
sitting
own little Baghdad.
Barrel with his nails. in faded letters.
Oh, hey, speaking of the faded old woman. You know, I saw on television, I mean, obviously it was archival footage, but there was on, I was watching this documentary on A&E about the Outlaw Women of Country, but it was a dopey title, but it was all about the rise of women in country music from, like, Kitty Wells all the way up to, like, you know, stupid Shania Twain or whatever. But there were two people in this interview that were really fascinating. Well, first of all, Shelley Wright, who's really cute and who seems pretty smart. I sort of take it for granted that most people in country music, most artists, are not all that sharp. But Shelley Wright seemed really smart. She was really hot too. Boy, goddamn, just that bitch vibe just come off Shania Twain like nobody's business. Though every interview I see with her, it's like she just has that I smell. It's like she has that smell on her face, like someone just broke wind near her. That's the expression on her face every time she's being interviewed. She just seems like an awful, horrible, deeply, deeply mean person. Just everything about her. But two people they did interviews with in this Females in Country Music special, A, Minnie Pearl, and I don't know when the footage was from, but just the look of the film and the color and... Just sort of the way, because like you can tell footage from the 70s, and you can tell or yellow, like it's filmed,
doesn't matter what color they're wearing, it turns green,
like it's filmed through algae.
Yeah.
But this seemed like pretty recent footage. I mean, because when did she die? When did Minnie Pearl die?
Recently.
So it was like year. I think it was from the 90s. I think it was the mid. I can't tell whether she looked older than she did on Hee Haw or not. I mean, I think Minnie Pearl is one of those people who got to a certain age and then just, like, the universe was just like, we keep trying to age her further, but we just can't. It was sort of like they'd sucked all the life out of her that could be sucked. And I get the feeling that like, the universe and time can only do so much. And you do reach a sort of event horizon beyond which you cannot look any older. And
so she died in 1996. She was 84, and she had a stroke in Nashville.
Really? Mm-hmm. Well, she looked way older than 84. All right, let's see here. So
she was on the Love Boat once, as everyone else was.
Really?
Yeah, 1979.
She was born in Hickman County. That's hard to believe. She graduated from Nashville's most prestigious school for young ladies, apparently.
Her straw hat had a $1.98 price tag still on it.
Yes, it did. Let's see here. So, blah, blah, blah. Oh, this is said. Minnie Pearl, a legend in the broadcast, or in the country music field. She died at age 83 during her final years in the nursing home. I mean, it's one thing if you're broken, your family hates you, but come on.
Oh, I don't know. She had two fast food chains, Minnie Pearl's Roast Beef and Minnie Pearl's Chicken. The slogan for both chains was, "How delicious."
That's fantastic. I wonder if, okay, here's something that no one has ever thought. I wonder if Minnie Pearl was hot at one point. I mean, the archival photo they've got of Minnie Pearl on Wikipedia here is, I would guess she's probably 65 here.
Her real name was Sarah Coley.
Sarah Ophelia Coley, I believe.
In your face.
Who is the Minnie Pearl master now? I wonder if Minnie Pearl, there's just certain people, and I know this is a frequent topic of discussion here, that there's just, that you try to imagine them ever being hot, and it's like your brain just won't process it. I'm looking at this, okay, I gotta close this picture of Minnie Pearl. Anyway, so.
You just can't stop.
I can't turn away. Did she sing?
I don't think she did.
Was she just a comedian? Was she like a country? Comedian. Was she the Larry the Cable Guy of her day?
She was.
Okay. Well, there you go. Larry the Cable Guy is just a poor man's Minnie Pearl. That's the new talking point on him, just so you know, right now.
I know she's best known for Hee Haw.
Well, that is true. Hey, now Buck Owens is dead, right?
Yes.
But Roy Clark's still alive. Roy Clark is still alive. He's got to be. Roy Clark has got to. He's got to be alive.
Roy.
This is how we kill about 85% of the time on the show. Anyway, so they're talking to Minnie Pearl, and she seemed pretty great. She seemed like a nice person. And then, boy, do you want to know who has aged badly? That would be
still alive.
That would be Tanya Tucker, who has aged badly.
Well, she did a lot of drugs with Glenn Campbell back when she was younger.
Oh, yeah.
She was like his child bride.
Yeah.
He quickly brought her up to speed.
Here's some
in more ways than one.
Here's Tanya Tucker. That is some hard living that woman has done, because she was, I mean, Tanya Tucker came to prominence.
She was hot during her time.
I'm pretty sure about this, that Tanya Tucker first became famous when she was like 14.
Yeah.
Wasn't she on the cover of Rolling Stone when she was like 13 or 14? And the cover, I'm trying to remember exactly, now I'm going to have to look up Tanya Tucker. So much of this program is us just basically replicating our nighttime lives here in the station. Well, I'll just sit in front of the computer in my boxer shorts and look up things on Wikipedia.
It's really things you can't do at work.
No.
That we can.
Yeah, it's true. That's it. That's really what it is.
All the things you want to do at work right now, we can.
That not safe for work stuff that you get forwarded around.
It's safe for us.
NSFW. I can do show prep. It's content for the program. Okay. Tanya Tucker had her first hit Delta Dawn at the age of 13. And she was on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine when she was 13. But what is the, God, what was the headline? The cover, she was on the cover of Rolling Stone when she was either 13 or 15. And I'm trying to remember exactly what it said on the front, on the cover. But she was on the front of Rolling Stone, and it said something like, Tanya Tucker is 15 and, like, you know, wants it bad or something. Just something that was just so weird. And, I mean, people think that stuff all started with Britney Spears, but it did not. She was definitely underage. On the cover of Rolling Stone, and it was like her in some really seductive pose, and it said something like, Tanya Tucker is 15, but, like, you know, wants you to give it to her, or just something really weird. And then, yeah, she did the drinking habit and the drug habit. I mean, she really, Tanya Tucker in a lot of ways really is more like a traditional country music star than almost anyone, because she just had the she really should not be alive. She ought to be dead by now. And I think she did that second album, TNT. I think she was only 17, and she's doing something like straddling the microphone like it was some large phallus. And I mean, it was all very awkward. But you see her now, and don't you take it, Tim, you've worked in TV, you did an article of faith that there's just so much makeup put on everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, Sarah and I have talked about that. Now, like, everyone on television, regardless of how attractive the baseline is, everyone gets slathered in makeup.
Oh, totally.
Barb Barker probably got more than anybody.
Yeah. And I mean, so I'm watching this thing with Tanya Tucker, and you know that she just must have been covered in makeup. But it's like sometimes you just can't hide the ugly. You know what I mean? There's just no way to paint over it. Just, and just with the voice like this, and just all kinds of awkward. Apparently not just Michael Vick. Apparently Trailblazer Zach Randolph also doing dog fighting. Is he another member? Is he still a member of the Trailblazer? Oh, no, we traded away? All right, well, that's a shame. Hey, do you have a tractor observation, sir?
Yeah, I'll bet you the goober probably didn't have a driver's license.
The goober.
And backhoe, like they use on construction sites, is an off-highway vehicle.
Uh-huh.
So he probably wanted to stay out of trouble with Department of Licensing.
Yeah, but you know, I don't think you could just be driving a tractor down the road. I think you still have to have a license.
If you have one of those orange signs on the back, you're covered.
This sounds,
or moving vehicle.
This sounds like something that you have heard and believe to be true, but you don't actually know.
I knew a guy years ago. This is in Washington.
So
I
angry
knew a guy
about
years
it.
Ago.
Uh-huh.
I used to see him in the morning after he lost his license for DUI.
Uh-huh.
I'd see him in the morning driving down the road on his backhoe to go get cigarettes.
Yes, but I guess what I'm saying is I don't really know that that's legal. I'm not saying here's.
Right,
why am I even arguing about this?
Rick, we're probably not dealing with a Rhodes Scholar here.
No, that is true. I can't dispute that.
You know,
yes.
I live in Vancouver, and now it's Vantucky.
Uh-huh.
Can we call Clackamas something like Clackasippy or Clackensaw?
Clackensaw. Clackensaw is really funny. Clackensaw.
You can use it, Rick.
All right, Clackensaw.
Copyright 2007, Rick Emerson.
All right, thank you. Thank
later,
you, my friend.
Dude.
All right, appreciate it. There you go. That's there you go. Clackensaw.
Mm.
All right, you heard it right here. That's starting right here.
This joke copyright 2007. Rick Emerson Show.
All right, here's Tim Roddy.
So let's get back to this bachelor party story. We talked a little bit about this the other day. Now we find out there weren't one but two people arrested over the weekend at that bachelorette party that got out of control over a male stripper act. This happened in Northwest Kearney Street just after midnight in Washington County. Caller said he was acting as a security guard for his two friends who were hired to perform a striptease routine, but told police the men stopped their act after the women became too drunk and unruly. He told a 19-year-old maid of honor, Tessa Weller, that the three were going to leave.
Just sounds sexy.
That's when Weller called her boyfriend to come get the money back from the strippers. While driving away, the victims say they had to stop because one of their tires had been slashed. Right then, police said 21-year-old Joshua Fultz came up and threatened them with a bat, demanding the $200 back. They gave him the money back, and Fultz went back into the house. The officers arrived and arrested Fultz on weapons charges, menacing, and robbery. Melissa D. Valdez, 19, also arrested for slashing the victim's tires, and she also got a ticket for minor in possession. And this guy was arrested, has a tat on his neck.
Now,
but
Can I say this?
Sure.
I am still fascinated by this story. Out of a bachelorette party. It appears to be two women in the house. What kind of a bachelorette party is that?
Maybe
two
she
women.
Has no friends.
My best girlfriend.
That's kind of sad.
It's not a bachelorette party. That's you and
well,
your
let's
only.
Let's throw a real party then.
we should. Two people were arrested Saturday. A bachelorette party got a control over a male stripper act. These were also not strippers. These were just some guys, right? These were like discount strippers.
I don't know where you get them on Craigslist, maybe.
Perhaps. I got a great story yesterday. Let's see if I have this. I got a great email yesterday about somebody saying that he had a great sort of fake stripper story. Yet it was
drivehomehappy.com is.
It was a story about It was a story about a guy who had to make up business cards for what clearly was like a fake stripper. Do I have it? Amateur male strippers. Is this the story? Rick, I used to work for an office supply store and at one point had to make business cards for a clearly unlicensed male stripper. His name was Bruce, and he looked like he'd fallen off the meth train and landed square on Malt Liquor Avenue. His girlfriend, who also looked like a self-made stripper, was instructing him on what the aesthetics of his business card should be. They settled on a glossy black background with gold-letter words that said, Bruce, Adult Party Entertainer, along with contact information, followed by a list of things he would dress up as. Among them, Sexy Pizza Delivery Boy. It was difficult to contain my mirth as I pictured this guy with his massive guts sticking out of a cheap Halloween costume dressed as a sexy pizza delivery boy. I will never sleep again. So two women and a guy hired these strippers to come over, but they wanted more than the strippers would provide. And so then this guy came out and threatened to beat on the strippers and slash their tires and took their money. I just want to know who these... And the idea of fleeing a bachelorette party, I just want to know who these strippers were, and I want to know what these women look like. All right. I'll just set this over here in the pile of things we have to investigate further at some point.
And they said, from here on now, we're only booking parties in Clackamas County.
Yeah, and on that note, hello, sir. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Why, hello.
Oh, is that the new phone system at work?
Hello there. All right. Well, there you go. Here's Jim Riley.
The Portland Trailblazers' newest addition is Damaged Goods. Greg Oden will get his tonsils removed on Saturday. I thought that's something they did with kids. Recovery time expected to be between 2 and 3 weeks. It'll force Oden to miss the NBA Summer League, whatever that is. He'll also miss the USA Basketball Men's Senior National Team Training Camp in late July. Well, it's only a game.
Yeah. Rick, this email just says, one indisputable fact about Minnie Pearl, she was absolutely indisputably hot as balls. You know it. I'm right. And then there's a photograph of her at about age 20. No, never hot. Never hot in any way. Always kind of weird and gangly looking. All right. Here's Tim Riley.
Just for something totally different, how about a religious nutcase watch?
Fantastic. Here's your religious nutcase watch for Wednesday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
This comes to us from the Pope, who lives in Italy. He has reasserted the universal primacy of the Roman Catholic Church, approving a document released that says Orthodox churches were defective and that other Christian denominations were not true churches.
You're all going to be damned.
It is the second time in a week the Pope has corrected what he says were erroneous interpretations of the Second Vatican Council of 1962 to 65 meetings that modernized the church. Christ established here on earth only one church, the document said. The other communities cannot be called churches in the proper sense because they do not have, I do not even understand what he's saying, so why should anybody else? The document is to be truly constructive. It must not involve the mutual openness of participants, but also have fidelity to the... Now, what Catholic knows what this guy's talking about and is going to follow it?
None. Well, you know, I read another follow-up on this, because this pope is sort of fascinating to me. Pope, the Nazi pope. Pope, yeah, Nazi pope. Benedict the 16th or
Benedict
whatever he is.
Benedict the Arnold.
And by the way, there is that photograph floating around of him. I think, isn't there that photograph of him as a Hitler youth?
Yeah.
Yeah. And his big ruby slippers on. I read this story because it is sort of strangely fascinating to me. This Pope is sort of the George W. Bush of the Vatican.
Yeah.
Because he just clearly has no sense he can't sense the prevailing public wind at all. Because as we always say, no one here in America who is Catholic follows anything the church says at all. The Catholics disregard 85% of what it's not like, it's not like being a Mormon where they really, like, crack down on that stuff. And they, like, you know, they drag you into the office and make sure that you are tithing 10%. And if you live in Utah, for example, I mean, there's...
I guess they can make your life miserable.
I mean, well, I'm just saying, like, if you live in Utah, there is sort of just...
Unless you're Marie Osmond.
Enough control over the culture there that, you know, you sort of stay in line. So maybe being a Catholic in Italy is different than being a Catholic here. But being a Catholic here, it's sort of like the cat is far enough away that the mice play 24 hours. It doesn't matter. And so what he's basically doing, though, is he's trying to play to the hardcore Catholic base by just rolling back all that Vatican II stuff. So he issues this encyclical, I think is what it is, where he says that the Catholic Church is the only true faith and everybody who's not a Catholic is going to burn. But the better part in this, though, if you read further into his statement, he also says that he does not believe that the Catholic Church should have. This is exactly what you need, by the way, to get more people to become Catholics. He says that he does not believe the Catholic Church should have turned away from the Latin Mass.
Oh, yeah.
So he wants everybody...
He wants to revive the old Latin Mass.
So he wants everybody to be doing the Latin Mass again.
And then it says, according to this article, and who knows who they pulled for this, but the sentence says, traditional Catholics cheered the move.
Uh-huh. Sure they did.
Where were they? And who are these Catholics?
That's some guy who works in his outer office who just says, that's great, Benny. That's fantastic. So...
Red shoes have a new coat of polish. Better get them now. Yes, Catholics everywhere are cheering this as we speak.
Your pajama game DVD just arrived. The Catholic used to do this before 1967. They did this mass where the priest did everything in Latin, and his back was to the congregation. That was the other thing. He used to just stand with his back to the entire congregation and do the whole church in Latin. Like you could possibly make Catholic Church less interesting. Like you could make it duller than it already is. So, anywho, so there you go. So, but, you know, the thing is, if you're not Catholic, you don't care. And if you are Catholic, you're going to ignore this anyway. So it doesn't really matter. So there you go. That's the ruby-slippered Pope and his new encyclical. That's your religious nutcase watch for Wednesday. Back after this, more Tim Riley. You stay right there. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. All right, this sort of sums it all up. Listening to part of this during the break. Taryn Southern, a country western lesbian school teacher. She has this whole song. What's the song called? Hot for Hill? It's a Hot for Hillary Clinton song. I'm unclear about whether it's awful or wonderful. It really is. There's some lines in here that were just cringeworthy. Let me just, where's that sample line about? There's a great line. Let me just play a little bit of it. We'll play the whole thing later. How great is that? So great and creepy. There's no way to describe this video. I'm at Blogger right now, and I'm gonna put this on my weblog.
So that's a new campaign song?
It's unreal. This can't possibly be from the Hillary Clinton campaign, and even like a back channel third party kind of way. There's just no way she has any association with this. This has got to be whoever this singer is, Taryn Sutton, thinking and correctly as it seems that she's gonna get some attention from this. But literally, it's, and first of all, I don't know if this girl's, only she knows, I suppose. I'm not sure if she's really a, quote, country western lesbian school teacher. I was going to say, she's scorching hot, though. She's really unbelievably hot. And so most of the video is her in a bikini doing things like rolling around on a copy of the Constitution. And here she's in a bikini, and she's sort of leaning forward and giving you, like, the deep dish cleavage view, while a flag waves in the background, and a bald eagle is sort of superimposed over the whole thing. And then that line about if everybody could get a taste of Hillary, she has a cake in front of her, a sheet cake, with Hillary's face on it, and she, like, digs a spoon into it, and she gives it, like, the long, slow lick with, like, the close-up on the camera. It really is fantastic. Well, hell, it's worked on me. I'll post it. All right. Here's Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth. I'm going to post that right now.
Wait, in a related story, for the first time, the leading candidates for the presidency, well, the Democratic ones anyway, will hold a televised debate devoted solely to LGBT issues. This is a one-hour event. It's going to be held August 9th and broadcast on the Gay Network logo at 9 o'clock. So Hillary's going to be there, along with Barack Obama, John Edwards, and somebody named Chris Dodd.
This really does kind of surprise me. I saw that on Drudge last night.
Yeah.
That is the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered community.
Yeah.
So it's Hillary, John Edwards, Obama, and Chris Dodd.
Chris Dodd.
So it is a gay debate. So here's a dumb question. Is it just that it's a regular debate, but it's on Logo, which is the channel targeted at that community? Or is it a debate during which the issues are going to be those which affect the gay community?
Issues that affect the gay community. They're going to be questioned by Melissa Etheridge and Joel Somanese of HRC.
Melissa Etheridge, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. All right, well, I mean, it's fine with me. I mean, bully for them. It's just, I am surprised that they agree to that, especially because John Edwards, for one, is just such a freaking weasel about the whole gay marriage thing. He's another one of those, I can't be pinned down on an actual...
His wife answers it, but he doesn't.
Well, because his wife seems to have some stones. How sad is that? John Edwards' wife appears to have a bigger sack than he does. You didn't win Ann Coulter? Did you see Ann Coulter just get schooled by, what's her name, by John Edwards' wife? What's her name? Elizabeth Edwards?
Yeah.
And as the internet kids say, Ann Coulter just got pwned by her. She was on with Chris Matthews. Elizabeth Edwards called up and just gutted her like she was a sea bass. And, of course, John Edwards is nowhere to be seen. I mean, I do think that the guy has great, awesome political skills. He's got a great way that he interacts with people. But he just seems like he's just... There's just no stones on that guy. So, anyway, I am sort of surprised that they all agreed to this because it just seems like... It seems like they all try to paint themselves as such moderates. Mm-hmm. But I guess they might... I guess they just figured that they're never going to get the GOP base anyway, and so they might as well just embrace the left wholeheartedly, which is fine. I think I might actually watch this if only to see one of them try to pin somebody down on the gay marriage thing, because I don't think... Which is just so infuriating to me. It just... makes me so irritated that they will not, I mean, just have a goddamn spine and just give your answer. I mean, even if, I guess, even John Edwards, even if, for example, he's one of those guys that doesn't think there ought to be gay marriage, and I sort of get that sense off of him, but that he just doesn't want to say it, whatever. I mean, just to sort of open your mouth and just say what you actually think. So maybe they'll sort of drill that answer out of one of them, which would be great. So when is that going to happen?
That's going to happen August 9th.
I'll totally watch that, just to see if they can make him squirm. All right. Hot as balls, lesbian, I love Hillary video. All right. Fantastic. Oh, wait, who is this here? This is... I've lost my screen. Hold on just a second. This is... oh, really? I think we'll wait. Here's Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
Well, I'm loading up this Elizabeth Edwards and culture confrontation.
It's pretty great. She brings up something. Let's see, a video for Hot for Hillary. And we don't have to play the whole thing, but there's a great moment there when Elizabeth Edwards is, you know, asked Ann Coulter just like, you know, quit attacking me and my family personally, and she points out that Ann Coulter at one point made a joke about John Edwards having a bumper sticker that said, "Ask me about my dead son."
Oh, geez.
Which, and Ann Coulter's only response was like, "That was a couple years ago that I said that." So, it's just sad that Elizabeth Edwards has to fight her husband's fights for her. So, all right, I have, let's see, I have posted now. Let's see if it's posting. Oh, no, I gotta revamp the link. But, okay, I'm posting here in just 1 minute this video for Hot for Hillary, which is really creepy and really great all at once. All right, here's Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
So let's catch a little bit of this. This is Elizabeth Edwards confronting Ann Coulter on MSNBC.
You know who's on the line? Somebody to respond to what you said about Edwards yesterday morning. Elizabeth Edwards. She wanted to call in today. We said she could. Elizabeth Edwards, go on the line. You're on the line with Ann Coulter.
Hello, Chris.
Do you want to say something directly to the person who's with me?
I was calling, you know, in the South when we someone does something that displeases us, we want to ask them politely to stop doing it. I'd like to ask Ann Coulter, too, if she wants to debate on issues, on positions. We certainly disagree with nearly everything she said on your show today. But it's quite another matter for these personal attacks. The things that she has said over the years, not just about John, but about other candidates, lowers our political dialogue precisely at the time that we need to raise it. So I want to use the opportunity, which I don't get much because Ann and I don't hang out with the same people, to stop the personal attacks.
Okay, so I made a joke, let's see, 6 months ago, and as you point out...
Through this whole thing, Ann Coulter's doing this weird schoolgirl thing of, like, twirling her hair really nervously, because you can tell she was caught off guard by it.
Him.
I didn't say anything about him, actually.
Yeah, she's twirling her hair.
But Ann knows, you know that's not true. And what's more, this has been going on for some time.
And I don't mind you trying to raise money. I mean, it's better this than giving $50,000 speeches to the poor. Just to use my name on the web pages. But as for a debate with me...
What is that weird accent she's got?
I'm asking you politely to stop personal attacks.
How about you stop raising money on your web page? No, you don't have to, because I don't mind.
It did not start with that. You had a column a number of years ago.
Wait, okay,
where
the
you
wife of a presidential candidate is calling in asking me to stop speaking?
Let her finish the
You're
point.
Asking me to stop speaking.
You
stop writing your columns. Stop writing your book.
Okay,
years
Anne,
ago.
Please.
Okay.
Which made fun of the moment of Charlie Dean's death and suggested that my husband had a bumper sticker on the back of his car that said, "Ask me about my dead son."
That's now 3 years ago.
It's nothing. Youthful indiscretion. All right, so there you go. There's Ann Coulter getting reamed by Elizabeth. The great thing about Ann Coulter, by the way, where is she from? Does anybody know?
I don't know. She's trying to put on this Valley Girl accent.
That accent she's got is so weird. She does this strange thing of elongating out her vowels, and it's like this. And you're totally right about it. It's like this weird Galleria-like accent that she's picked up. It's like a Moon Unit Zappa kind of a thing. The other weird thing about Ann Coulter is there's a whole scandal. Here's how much of a nerd I am. I spend a lot of time, not just at Wikipedia, because it's a fascinating place, but there was a whole article that someone sent me, I think, that they found on Dig, which is all about... Because on Wikipedia, you know, it's the encyclopedia that anybody can edit. And so, you know, users and just folks will go there and they'll edit things on Wikipedia. And somebody sent me a list of the 10 longest, like, edit wars back and forth on Wikipedia where some fact had been changed back and forth and back and forth and back and forth and back and forth on Wikipedia between two warring parties. Like, there was this... There apparently was some edit war on Wikipedia. How funny is this? So there's an entry on Wikipedia for arachnophobia, the fear, which is a fear of spiders. And so they could not agree about whether it was appropriate. This is pretty interesting, actually. They couldn't agree about whether it was appropriate to have a photograph of a spider on the entry for arachnophobia. And that is kind of interesting when you think about it. On the encyclopedia entry for arachnophobia, should you have a picture of a spider? And so someone kept posting a picture of like a huge venomous spider with like 1,000 eyes and huge teeth. And so if you were looking up arachnophobia, the first thing you saw was a spider like the size of a house. And then somebody else kept changing it back to like a cartoon picture of like a friendly spider with a top hat. And it went on for like 4 months until I think the Wikipedia people finally stepped in and like put their foot down. But there was this long edit war going on the Ann Coulter entry because no one can find out what year she was born. And she herself gives conflicting accounts. The age shaving has begun, where she, I believe, claims that she is 3 years younger than she really is. And this is an interesting thing, there is evidence to indicate that she falsified her driver's license, too. She has at least one state document that has a knowingly falsified age on it. That was sort of the claim being made on Wikipedia. So there's that. Rick, this email says, about the Pope. A Jewish friend of mine was a little irritated when he found out that the reinstitution of Latin Mass would bring back a section of the Catholic ceremony which dealt with praying specifically for Jews. Apparently this is praying for them because, I don't know, I guess, because they're not Catholic, apparently. I feel that the singling out of the Jews by Catholics is tacky. Well, it's really the only good thing it's all Catholics really have as far as a skill is singling out people that they feel are beneath them. God, let's see here. How about this? Rick, male strippers. One night after a league bowling, a group of the ladies had a surprise birthday party for a member who was turning 40. The party was complete with a local male stripper who was dressed like a cop and sporting handcuffs. When he entered the room, I burst into laughter because he was one of the customers that frequented the machine shop where I worked. He was in good shape but had a voice that sounded like Pete Puma. When he... I want a whole lot of lumps. When he told the birthday girl that she was under arrest, I was waiting for him to finish up with a whole lot of lumps. But I never looked at him quite the same. Fantastic. Here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Well, look who's back in the news today. It is John McCain trying to ease concerns about his struggling campaign one day after a major shakeup at his campaign staff.
My campaign is fine. I'm happy with the way it is. Uh-huh. We've had to make adjustments. We've had ups and downs. So we will continue to campaign the way I do best, which is not with money, but with town hall meetings and with face-to-face encounters with the voters. And I'm confident we will do very well.
Mm-hmm. Just like the place in Iraq.
Yeah, sure.
He's impressed about growing our GOP defections in Iraq.
I think that my Republican colleagues are concerned about a number of issues. I think they're concerned about, in some ways, the lack of progress in some areas. I think they are concerned about the upcoming election. I think that they are feeling pressure. We all read the polls.
Yes, we do. Scotty actually made a pretty funny comment. Scotty just said he should start a drinking campaign. That'll be next. I mean, his time. I mean, I hate putting Lisa Goddard on the spot with stuff like this because I know that she does. You know, she's here to be a purveyor of the facts and to relate to hard information. Mm. And sometimes I sort of push her to editorialize a little bit, but I didn't want to put her on the spot about John McCain. But clearly, his time has passed. Clearly, he is yesterday's man, and he will not be winning anything ever again. It's just not in the cards. It's not going to happen for him.
So we're supposed to be all up in somebody's grill about this terrorist thing. Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff tells the Chicago Tribune,
"Yes, okay,
he had a gut feeling that the country faces a heightened potential of attack this summer. They always do this." Because we have to keep reminding them that they need us. White House Secretary Tony Snow says, there's always a time for terrorist activity, but there's no specific or credible terrorist effect on the U.S. right now. But he says, pay careful attention to them anyway.
Summertime has always been a time of heightened activity, particularly by Al-Qaeda.
And people in Clackamas.
Always. Always. Constantly.
Please keep your eyes and ears open.
They want to make a bloody splash someplace. And it's important merely to be vigilant.
Please remain vigilant.
Quite often it is the random act of vigilance, the report to a police department, the sighting of something suspicious, that ends up helping save lives.
You need the government.
Does he even think these statements through?
Doesn't matter.
A random act. Please to describe what a random act of vigilance is. That doesn't even make
somebody
any sense.
Somebody going to somebody's house on a tractor?
That's a random act of vigilance sounds like you're sort of just rifling through the phone book. Dubinsky, Shelley A. I think she's a terrorist. That's what a random act of vigilance is. Yes, remember when you drive alone, you drive with Ivan.
And Senate Republicans have blocked efforts to give U.S. troops longer breaks between overseas deployments.
The yeas are 56, the nays are 41. The motion is not agreed to.
And what is this? Is this to give it to
shorten the breaks?
To whatever.
Keep fighting.
Can I come home? No.
No.
No, stay over there.
It's only 140 degrees.
Seriously, buck up. Be a man. Rick, we keep getting email about this bachelorette party. I mean, this really has triggered some sort of a real response in the audience.
We need to hold our own.
Strip. What?
We need to hold our own.
Oh, I thought you meant hold our own like stand fast, stay firm.
Oh, no.
Oh, you mean we need to hold our own bachelorette party. Okay. Yes, right here in the studio. Rick, I'm thinking of, I don't think we've ever had... we had Betsy who used to be on the show a long time ago, but I mean, in terms of like having a stripper come in, I don't think we've ever actually done that. I don't think the Rick Emerson show has ever had a stripper of any kind. We had a guy strip for Sarah though.
Yeah, but,
Mike, in Seattle. Yeah, we had a guy strip for Sarah, but we've never had a female come in and strip. That's, I'm not gonna say it's
Betsy's never stripped either. I mean, in the studio.
That's true.
Come in looking normal.
I'm not going to say it's point of pride. I'm just saying it's one of those things that every show does that we have not done. Rick, I'm thinking a bachelorette party of two was interested in hiring a couple of male hookers, hence the request for extra. And since the dudes declined that offer, it screams that the women were major skanks. This is just the listener's assessment, by the way. This is opinion that the Rick Emerson show is passing along. These opinions, while they might be accurate, they don't represent us. What's interesting is that the boyfriend was in the house at the time. Oh, this makes sense, actually. Probably in the closet videotaping the whole thing. That totally sounds plausible. I'm not saying that was the case. Fox 12, always on the case with the hard news, says that the women had expected to see, quote, the full Monty, and the strippers wouldn't do it. Really? You'd think that would just sort of be understood. Don't male strippers typically... I thought it was just part of the deal. I thought it was understood. Have you ever seen a real male stripper?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Do they do the whole deal?
Yeah.
They go all the way down?
All the way down.
I had no idea.
No, I totally told you when I got one for my friend for her 17th birthday.
I guess have I blocked this story out?
Yeah, we hired him, we rented a hotel room, and
she was
17?
Attention, Susan Reynolds. This is what you have to look forward to.
Yeah, and by the way, a lot of hotels like rent rooms to like 16-year-old girls too. So we were there, and we hired a guy named Roger. I've told you this, and then his name was Roger, and he had a long blonde ponytail, and he was completely naked.
I don't remember this. I don't know why.
And then I was watching Jerry Springer like a few weeks later, and it was I Have a Crush on Someone in My Profession. And it was a girl stripper, and she had a crush on Roger.
So
and
this was in Bremerton?
Yeah.
So. It was her 17th birthday. How old were you?
I think 16.
So as a 16-year-old, you could not only get a hotel room, but a male stripper. Do you suppose that it's that easy for 16-year-old boys to get female strippers? Is it just a matter of money?
Oh, they didn't. It was just a matter of money because I think they had to do a credit card or something. But we shipped him in from Seattle, so he came across the ferry.
You imported him?
Yeah, because there weren't any in Bremerton, so we imported him from Seattle.
And so, God, I wonder if he knew that you were all underage. He probably just didn't ask.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Because it was a birthday party. He probably just assumed, as
yeah,
I think
yeah,
I would.
He was dressed as a cop. It was the saddest.
Was it just like every cliche? Was he a hot cop?
So he said, I'm like, all right, just have him pretend that he's busting us for underage drinking. And so he had to come in, and he's like, all right, somebody's got to sneak into my boombox first. So I had to go out and meet him. Sneak in the boombox. So
oh, my God. You brought in the boombox. Wait, hold on. No. We have to. Okay. We have to discuss this right now. Okay. So you're in a hotel room. How many girls are there?
There must have been like 20 of us, maybe.
In a hotel room.
Yeah.
You're all, and so did, what was your friend's name? What was her friend's name?
Tanea.
So Tanea, did she just think like, we're just getting together to drink and hang out?
Yeah, it was just under the idea that we were just going to go to this hotel room, hang out there, drink a bunch of beer.
Okay.
Of course I wasn't because I was 16.
Sure, of course, no.
Yeah.
No, of course, Susan Reynolds. The underage never drink. So Tanea, you guys were all hanging out there. You're like, oh, I have to go out to my car and get my rouge or whatever. So you go to the car to meet the hot cop stripper. And who brought the boombox? You or him?
The cop, the Roger brought his own boombox. So I go outside to meet him. And he's like, you know, wearing like, he doesn't even look like a cop. You know,
yeah.
It's blue and it has like a shining badge. But that's about it. And like a bit, and just like a little boombox. So I had to go out and then pretend to be doing something and then bring it in. So that way he could come in.
Now, what kind of entrance did he make? So did you bring the boombox into the room?
Yeah, I brought the boombox into the room, and then he came and knocked on the door a few minutes later, and, you know, there's this loud pounding.
Why, hello, girls.
No, he's like, excuse me, I heard there's underage drinking going on in here. And he's like, but which one's, you know, Tanea? And she's like, oh, it's me. He said, I heard there's underage drinking, and I can't remember the line that he said, but he had some cued line that he told.
This is some kind of bust.
Yeah, and then he, like, went, whew, and started taking off his clothes. And he went all the way.
Here's what I got to know, though. Here's what I have to know. So he knocks it. This is the best story I've ever heard.
It was so awkward, too, because he... Okay.
No, okay. Hold on.
I don't want to jump ahead.
So
are you in there reading Tiger Beat?
So...
Hello?
Yes, this is Officer...
The Bremerton Police Department. Officer Roger.
This is Officer...
I really don't know
Officer
how he
Longfellow.
Rented that hotel room. Now that I think about it.
Well, it was a different time.
Yeah.
It's a pre-9/11 era. So this is Officer Long John. I understand there's some underage drinking
and then happening.
You open the door and he says, "So, which one is Tanea?" And then you all point at her. And then here's what I have to know. At what point?
Like, it was like 10 years ago. I don't remember.
No, you do. At what point did someone press play on the boombox?
As he had some line. He was just like, "Oh,
I'm gonna need a groove."
No, he had something, I remember, and he, like, threw off his hat, and he had, like, all this blonde hair in there, and then put it in a ponytail, and then took off his clothes, and he put Tanea in a chair, and then proceeded to dance around her, like, oiling himself up.
What was the song on the boombox, do you know?
I don't remember.
Oh, that's the detail. Oh, that's too bad. That's the detail with the complete picture.
I haven't thought about this in a long time.
I thought it would be like, I'm so excited.
It was totally awkward, too, because there's this old man, like, shoving his junk in Tanea's face. Like, what are you doing? And it went on forever,
too.
How old
was this fellow?
Yeah, what would you estimate his age was?
I'd say, like, late 20s.
Did he seem older, though?
He did look
hard life.
He kind of looked like Scotty J with a long blonde ponytail and taller.
So it's kind of a William H. Macy stripping for you.
Totally.
Sort of a thing.
But with like a David Hasselhoff body.
A bit of Ava Gotta.
Totally, just a little bit of sag going on. And so what was Tanea's response? Was she mortified?
Yeah, we were all, you know, we'd all had a couple beers.
Yeah. Yes, I suppose. And then
she thought it started out being really hilarious, and it went from hilarious to really awkward.
And then he went all the way down to the naked.
All the way down. I remember him asking us too. He's like, "You ladies want me to take it all off?" And we're like, "Yeah."
And you're all like 16. Susan Reynolds.
And then the real cops actually ended up coming, and I had to hide in the bathroom with Roger. And we talked to him about stripping.
Wait. Okay. So hold on. So then the real cops come. You're 16 years old, having illegally rented a hotel room, drinking, and I think probably illegally having purchased a male stripper who is waving his genitals in the face of a bunch of underage girls in a hotel room. You are then...
You make it sound so bad.
You are then hiding in the bathroom. Is he nude?
With a bunch of...
Is he nude in the bathroom?
He put on this little, like, sequin thong thing.
So you're hiding in a bathroom with a guy bulging out of a sequin thong.
Yeah, from the real cops with this guy who's dressed as a cop.
And you're all like 12. Oh, that's fantastic.
And the real cops finally went away, and then so did Roger, and then...
Did they just never even...
Because you could rent the hotel room by the hour, so we just rented it.
What kind of a hotel was this?
Oh, it's still there. It's really creepy.
Is it just like a skank hotel?
Yeah, it's in West Bremerton.
Oh. Did they didn't even look in the bathroom?
No. No, we had it locked. And they were questioning some people, because it was like me and like four of my friends and Roger all in the bathroom. He's like, I think he was afraid he was going to get in trouble, considering, you know, what he was doing was probably very illegal.
Yeah, do you think?
We're just doing things that young girls do. We have a little taffy pole.
Susan Reynolds, this is going to be your life in 3 years.
A taffy pole. Wait. I don't even know if I want to take this. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
She sure his name was Roger. This wasn't Officer Dangle.
Jim Dangle.
All right, thank you. It's just so... All right, thanks.
That was the worst part of that.
All right. How about this? Rick, for a Fringe Bachelor, we could do a whole day on awkward stripper stories. For a full Fringe Bachelor party a few years back, we had... For a Friends Bachelor party a few years back, we had lined up two hot female strippers. At the last minute, without warning, our two hot strippers were replaced with one not-so-hot stripper. She arrived with her personal bodyguard, who was not only a 350-pound woman, but was the stripper's mom. Imagine what the family dynamic must be there. Mom is a 350-pound bodyguard who pimps out her daughter as a stripper. Things were going fine until the girl's self-described pimp showed up. He managed to raise a lot of hell until a .32 gun was fired just over his head. Then he left. Ha ha, best party ever. All right. Well, there you go. All right. It's 503-733-2970. Yeah, I don't even imagine. The only thing that could make this more perfect is if I knew exactly what the song was. Like, yeah, somebody Never Gonna Give You Up by Rick Astley. Just something. Something, or like that Too Unlimited... You know that y'all get ready for this song or something, Pump Up the Jam or something. All right. It's 105. We have Roop coming up. We got a break.
Oh, yeah.
Take a break. Come back. Jim Roop coming up. We'll check in with Scotty J about some things. More from Tim Riley around the corner. Later on, today's top five. Like is to three, Dynamite is seven. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Show. You stay right there. Wait here, I've got the worst song ever for the stripper to be playing while he's shaking his junk for Sarah and their underage friends. But somebody, listeners have started suggesting the worst possible song the stripper could have been playing. This is where the smoke is clearing. Ladies, I'm going to have to ask you to sit down.
I love this song.
Just picturing Joe Bluth stripping down to his Speedo. Oh, yeah.
Slow move. Blames the one before.
And all of their frustrations. I'm going to skip the obvious nightstick joke. It's beneath me. All right, ladies and gentlemen, live from Los Angeles. And that's now welcome to the Rick Emerson Radio Program, CNN Radio correspondent to the stars. Hello? For a minute, I thought that was Jim doing like a woo-hoo thing, and then it seemed to be going on a little too long. Wait, hold on. No. I know that I'm a prisoner to all my father has so dear. I know that I'm a hostage. Ladies and gentlemen, from Los Angeles, CNN Radio correspondent James Roop. Hello, sir.
Howdy.
We lost you there for a minute.
That's okay. I'm back.
All right. How are things? How's life? How's Southern California? Is it hot where you are?
No, it's actually very beautiful, around 80 degrees or so. Little breeze coming in from the ocean. Feeling pretty good.
Well, you see, that's something. I mean, you got that, not the marine layer. That's the haze thing. You got whatever it is. But you got the temperate, you know, the sort of...
It's an onshore flow right now.
That's sure.
The onshore flow is the air that's coming in off the ocean, cools things down. You have the marine layer in the morning. That burns off around noon. Then you got that nice, cool ocean breeze that wafts all the way in inland. It's beautiful.
Hey, just before we go on to the main story here, I know that this is a thing that they claim that you're not talking about this. They claim it's Amanda Moyer, but it's interesting because it seems like this ought to be in your wheelhouse. An update. Are you following the Fred Goldman OJ thing? Is there some new twist happening there? I guess there's something about the Goldmans trying to reissue that book with a new title.
Yeah, they have the rights to all of that now. You do know that, right?
Yeah, I guess I thought that they got the rights, but I thought that they got the rights and they were just going to stick it in a vault then and never put it out.
No, they're going to try and make some money off of it.
All right, so that is the thing that actually is going to happen.
Yeah, and that will for sure just make Simpson nuts.
Fantastic.
They're going to make money off of this thing that he was hoping to make money off of. And that, you know, that primarily is really Fred Goldman's mission. It's not about really collecting that $30 million. It's about driving O.J. Simpson nuts to the point of suicide, you know?
No, I was going to say I'm amazed that O.J. hasn't just, offed himself at this point, but I guess I'm really not because...
His ego's too big.
Well, and because I think we've had this discussion before that I think, and especially if you read that book, the one that was leaked on the Internet, if you read that, it does seem like over time... He has just convinced himself enough that it's not like he's sort of excused himself or exonerated himself, but he has sort of fudged the details enough in his own head that he can sort of give himself a little plausible deniability.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. He honestly believes he didn't do it, I think.
Or that whoever, Charlie was there with him, or whoever the other guy that he was talking about was. So, hey, speaking of nutty killing guys.
Yeah, I think Moyer's on it because it came out of Florida.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even, you know, to be honest, we didn't even book her to talk about it because it's not, I mean, I'm going to wait and see kind of what unfolds. But that is, regardless of how people feel about it, and this is one of the benchmarks that we use on this program for determining whether or not to talk about something, is one of the litmus tests is, you know, whether it sort of, whether it affects the culture as a whole, whether it is part of an ongoing saga in the American popular consciousness. And O.J. certainly
well, that's
is that.
That's a great barometer, man. That is a great barometer.
Well, that's what we do, my friend. That's why I'm not above talking about Paris Hilton.
That's why you're my king.
That's what I do. This is interesting. We were talking about the serial killer guy, and we were talking, I mean, I read some report, and I don't know how cops arrive at these statistics, but I read some fascinating study a couple years ago where they said that the police believe that at any given time, there are between 30 and 35 serial killers, working the country. That within the United States, at any given moment, there are between 30 and 35 serial killers actively, meaning they continue to kill on whatever time frame, but they haven't been caught.
Right.
And you really only, and maybe this is just the Hollywoodization of the American psyche, but you really only ever hear about the guys that have got some sort of interesting hook. Like you hear about, you know, the Richard Ramirez's of the world, or the John Wayne Gacy's of the world, or the... you know, the Ted Bundy, they all have some gimmick, you know, like, you know, the Ramirez had the Night Stalker and the Satanism and Gacy had the clown suit and Ted Bundy was, Ted Bundy was a good-looking law student or whatever the hell. So it is sort of, I don't know, just a sad commentary that they're apparently executing some guy who was one of Southern California's most prolific serial killers, and we couldn't possibly, we sat and brainstormed who it might have been, and we couldn't come up with his name.
Chester Turner.
See, I don't even know who that is.
Well, if you lived out here, you do.
So what's his story? What's his deal?
He's a pizza delivery guy, and over the span of 10 years or 11 years, he murdered 11 women. But the thing was, and the reason why he didn't get a whole lot of play is because he targeted women that either were prostitutes or were drug addicts in the crack-infested areas of L.A., in the poorer neighborhoods. So, I mean, it took a long time before... people would realize there was a pattern here.
I see.
Because it was just another death in another bad neighborhood, you know, honestly.
Right.
They were strangled. And on one victim, I think what really kicked this off was the woman that he killed that had the fetus, that was pregnant. And I think that's really what caused things to kick into overdrive when they realized, wait a minute, this is pretty random here.
So how... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Then the judge yesterday, when they came back for sentencing... said, you know, just the fact that you were up close and strangled all these women, I mean, that's just fierce. That's just flat-out evil. Well, and you'd look them in the eye and just watch the life drain from them.
I can't remember if it was you that we were having this discussion with, or maybe it was just Sarah and I talking, but we were talking about the difference between, I mean, because there's shooting and there's stabbing and there's whatever. And I don't mean to be morbid about it, but obviously there are certain types of killing that go with certain types of crimes.
Right.
And I, you know, if you're getting up close, I think they say that stabbing and then the strangling, that's, you know, if you're doing the strangling, it's either like a crime of passion, you know, your wife in bed with the milkman, or you're just some guy who's just completely like, you know, you're just some guy who's kind of broken inside. I mean, you're one of those guys who should have been returned to sender immediately, like at the very beginning. You are a defective toy and you should have been sent back to the factory. So, all right. So he'll be gone. We don't have to worry about him anymore.
Well, not for a while. I mean, you know, the automatic appeal process kicks in. This could take decades. You know, so he'll sit on death row. We'll pay for his lunch every day until they decide what to do with him. But he's a big guy, big, ugly dude, big scar on his face. You know?
Maybe like one of those guys. I forget the dude's name. There was some guy that, I don't know, it was a while back. I don't know, maybe 15, 20 years, something like that. There was a guy they were going to execute, and his whole thing as he sat on death row was to become so fat that they could not fit him into the electric chair. Seriously, it sounds like a bad joke, but it was like he ate everything he possibly could all the time, every single day, because his whole deal was, if I'm too fat, they can't stand it. It was at a time when the electric chair was the only method of punishment in the state. I think it was Kentucky. And his deal was, if I'm too fat, they won't be able to electrocute me. And his final meal was something absurd. It was like, you know, it was like 15 hams and 4 pizzas and 75 gallons of soda. Just some unreal, you know. And the best part was, the final joke was that he fit in there perfectly.
Really?
He fit into the chair absolutely like it was custom made to his big murdering ass. It was so satisfying. So, there you go. So sometimes things just work out. You know what I mean?
Yes, they do.
All right, my friend. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon. Try to stay cool. We're failing at that, but enjoy the...
Is it hot where you are?
Oh, no, it sucks up here. It was 102 yesterday. 100 degrees here, and I know that there are places in the world that are hotter. I know that, you know, like
miserable. I don't care what.
Oh, yeah, that's what I mean. It's like above a certain level. Like, and I always feel like an ass complaining about it because, like, for example, a couple weeks ago, we had this guy Shane in here, and he's one of our listeners in the military, and he listens to us online. And he's in Germany now, but he had been in Iraq until very recently, and a lot of his friends are still over there. And I always ask these guys, because we get a lot of service people who come in, they stop by the studio when they're on leave or whatever. And my first question, because it fascinates me, is to these guys is always, what did it feel like when you stepped off the plane? He talked about stepping off the plane in Iraq, and a friend of his had a thermometer watch, and he looked down and it said 126 degrees. And I said, what is the hottest it ever was? And he said, at one point on the ground, it was 142 degrees. And it's like that...
That starts to melt your shoes.
Well, at that point, this sounds dumb, but it seems almost like at that point, and again, I say this as some pasty-ass city guy who's never been anywhere. At that point, though, it almost seems like you would just stop feeling it at a certain point. You know what I mean? Like 140, 145, really. Can
yeah,
you even...
it's like before you suffer from heat exhaustion, you stop sweating and everything's fine.
Yeah, it's like you hear about those guys that climb Mount Everest, you know, and it's 100 below, you know, zero or something, and they're just sitting there going, well, yeah, what is it 100 below? Yeah, yesterday it was only 90 below. And it's like, well, what are you going to do? You know, you can't even feel it anymore. So
Aren't you getting any rain?
No, that won't happen until, I mean, it will get a little bit, but I mean, it won't kick in again until this. I mean, I shouldn't complain. Again, there's a lot of places that are worse, and I enjoy it because I get to ride my bike. I don't have to carry, you know, I don't have to carry rain gear. I don't have to carry a sweater or anything with me, but there are certain days, like occasionally, my wife and I have two vehicles. One of them is not air conditioned. And so occasionally I'll get stuck with the non-air conditioned truck, and then you get stuck in rush hour traffic as a drawbridge goes up somewhere, and it's 150 degrees inside the car, and you realize why freeway shootings happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. Enjoy your day, my brother. We will talk to you very soon.
Stay cool, boss.
There you go. CNN radio correspondent James Roop. Fantastic. All right. Before we do anything else, in fact, this guy, oh, has it been redone? Really? Wait, hold on. Let's give this a try and see if it works. This is a this may be a tweaked, as they say, version. I asked a guy to re-level some things in this sounder. Let's see if this plays correctly here. Mm-hmm. Opening media. Oh, for the love of sweet gravy!
It's better be worth it.
It's not. How can it ever be worth it now? You know why it won't play? It's because Mike and the Mechanics, The Living Years, is still playing. I'm sorry. Oh, and now my computer just crashed. Oh, now I can never play it. All right, well, I have to play the old one from yesterday then. All right, Scotty. You, Okay. Scotty, please come to the studio. No, seriously, this guy sent me a revamped version of the Scotty sounder. First, that crashed. Then my Firefox crashed. And then I tried to play the old one, and my Windows Media Player crashed.
Awesome.
It's like three things all at once, like concentric circles of hell. You know what it is? That's just, I've done something to displease the Lord, and he's trying to punish me in some way. Scotty J., hello, sir.
Good afternoon, Doofer.
Doofer. All right. How are you?
Great.
All right, we got lots to talk about today. We only got an hour and a half left in this stupid show today.
Oh, we need to do a seven-hour show, really.
There are days, sadly, when I do agree with you. I mean, there are certain days when there's like five, six, seven, eight, 9 hours of garbage we could be putting out there. Because look at all this thing. Look at all these things around me. These things I haven't done. All right, we still got to talk to you about Gabe Kaplan. We have Mr. Skin today?
Yes.
So we got break, we got Mr. Skin, then we got Tim, and then we got the top five, and then whatever. Now, who is this on line two?
The one and only. Jiminy Cricket.
I don't know what that means.
I don't either.
Let's try this conversation again. Who's on line two?
I believe it's Carl Click.
Oh, from K2.
Yes.
Okay.
Hey,
Carl
might know Click. How to get a hold of Gabe.
He is an anchor at an on-screen person. I say, trying to feel
but
my
I
way.
I prefer Jiminy Cricket. I'm starting the legal process now to change that. That is catchy.
Carl Click from Cato. Hello, sir. How are you, my friend?
Hey, I am good. Huge fan.
Thank
Huge
you.
Huge fan of Pasty Ass City Radio, as you say there.
That's what I do. So our good friend Kristen had mentioned to us yesterday that you didn't. Now, I apologize for not being more familiar with your oeuvre, as they say, because I just.
You're not up at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Well, I was just
going to
say, I mean, forgive the, you know, my observation, but I sleep in a lot and I don't watch a lot of television. So I got to, so who are you and what do you do?
I'm Jiminy Cricket. we're the morning news team at Channel 2. After years and years and years of being that at another station in town, as they say, now it's Channel 2. That's the place to be in the morning from 5 to 7.
And by other station, you mean KGW?
I can't speak the letters.
Okay.
Can we guess and you can, like, grunt or something?
It's contractual, yeah.
Oh, really? Is that true?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I was at Channel 8 for a long, long time.
Oh, see, these are all things
23 years, although I don't look it.
Okay, so now do you work on AM Northwest, or are you an on-site reporter? Do you sit behind the, do you shuffle papers behind the desk? And again, I'm not trying to...
No, he's an anchor.
I'm not trying to be an ass about this. It's just that I don't watch morning television much because I kind of wake up and I come to work and I do my deals. So I apologize for my ignorance, sir. I'm not trying to...
Well, I'm hoping now that I'm a part of Rick Emerson Nation, home in the afternoon, every day... That I can get you into our nation between 5 and 7 in the morning.
Hey, Tim, it's Carl Click from K2. You watch him every day, don't you?
Oh, yes, it's my favorite program.
Tim steals all our good stuff. Did you hear our story today?
No.
I'm surprised, and maybe I missed it, but Tim didn't have it. We had the story from Texas about the two high school friends who had a falling apart, by the way, in high school, and now 5 years later, one of them has stolen the other one's name, and she is an adult film star using that name.
That is badass.
Awesome. I do have that. I was just saving it for a special moment.
See, I beat Tim to the... I am at the Ministry of Truth right now.
Fantastic.
They allow
Excellent.
You to speak like that on K2?
they don't know that we exist. The rest of K2 don't even know we're here. Well, here's a question, sir. Now, can you would you favor us with a visit to the studio one of these days?
Anytime.
Scotty?
I'm in.
When do we have free time, Scotty?
Usually Friday nights.
What is wrong with you?
Scotty, I'm sorry.
There's no way to talk to
Carl
Quick.
Did Scotty sound...
Over.
Okay, just
three before
don't talk for
or
me.
Or after three.
I apologize for our visibly retarded and oftentimes drunk call screener here, Carl.
You have him hook up with my people and we will do it. Can I sit at the Ministry of Truth?
Well...
I don't know. It may have to be a trade of some sort.
I was just going to say, it may involve Tim sitting on your lap. That, I don't hear a no. I don't hear any protests.
What kind of contractual things I can make up to make that impossible. But.
Well,
we
you
ignore
know.
Contracts here.
Seriously.
As so many others in the past.
Excellent. Well, all kidding aside, thank you so much for listening. I appreciate it. It means a lot. And I know we got a lot of people in the other forms of media, the TV, and the, you know, people.
We
other
used to work
stations.
For that company way back when.
That's true.
They used to like us.
We did used to work for Fisher. Well, K2 never liked us. And that's not directed at you, sir.
No.
But we, even when we were working
We've
for Fisher.
We've never been invited over there.
We used to work at KOTK at the time that it was owned by Fisher, which, again, also owns K2. And, man, it's like we would ask for it was like I was asking them to give me bone marrow or something. Like, can we get a reporter to talk about it? Nope, phone calls returned.
Oh, how about the time when Peter Jennings came to town and they put us way in the back row where nobody could see us?
And then they had Lars Larson go sit up on the panel with him. Yeah. That was a lot of fun. We were working for the same freaking company.
Boy, I have released energy there that I did not know existed. Well, I'll do my best.
You know, we were sort
it's
of like
the new K2. It is the new K2.
It's part of the new spirit of the Northwest.
This is my final observation, but here our relationship with K2 was sort of like this. When we worked for the same company that owned you guys, when we used to work for them, it was sort of like we were sort of like at a family reunion. We were sort of like the kids of daddy's mistress. You know what I mean? That I guess technically had to be invited. But
we're the place where they store all the old mops.
Yeah.
cleaning solution.
We were the bastard at the family reunion.
Now that you are not and not working for the company, you're kind of like those people that we paid to go away.
That's fine.
Sure. Okay. Carl Click, K2, what time can people 5 to 7 on K2?
5 to 7 in the morning, and then again at noon, and then right after that, I hop in the car and turn on Rick Emerson.
Fantastic. God bless you.
Wow, so he's a full-time employee.
I'm going to put you on hold, my friend, and Scotty will talk to you. We'll figure out a time that works for your schedule. Have you come on to the studio?
I look forward to it.
All right.
I have to find some way to read about Carl Click. K2 people, is that what it's? I found a picture of Carl Click.
Is he an attractive man?
Carl Click. Mm. He's been at K2 for 22 years.
Really?
And he's from the Couve.
No, that doesn't seem right.
That's the oldest station I can't mention.
This is exactly the kind of crack journalism that we dish out every day here.
He has several Emmy nominations. He's won reporting awards for the Associated Press, the Journal of Professional Journalists, the Radio and Television News Directors Association. Oh, he won the school's prestigious Edward R. Murrow Award at WSU.
Is that true?
I went to WSU.
I think they're going to take that away after this, but thanks for finding.
Now, what is it? Hold on, I have to see the picture. Hold on, I have to see what Carl Click looks like.
He's an attractive gentleman.
He really is.
I would trust him.
No, I would.
Very trustworthy face.
Exactly.
I believe anything Carl Click says.
He enjoys watching his son play golf and baseball at Skyview High School in Vancouver.
I heartily swallow his lies.
His daughter plays soccer, basketball, and tennis for Skyview. Carl plays golf and enjoys hiking and bike riding in Central Oregon.
He likes candlelight dinners and men who are not afraid to cry.
He's done stand-up before.
Really?
Where?
I've done Harvey's, yeah.
Tell us a joke.
Oh, that again, contractual, can't. I'm going to fall back on that a lot.
All right. We should let you go.
He enjoys watercolor and writing.
We're just going to keep you here and abuse you all day otherwise. All right, Scotty, I'm going to put Carl Click on hold. We'll figure out a time that we're going to have you come on in the studio and hang with us. Thank you, Mike. Thank you for listening. I appreciate it.
You guys keep up the great work.
All right, there you go.
Thank
K2's
you.
K2's Carl Click. See you mornings 5 to 7 on K2. There you go.
I watch it every morning.
I wonder how old he was when he started television. He's been doing it for 22 years. He looks very young.
That's not a recent picture. That picture's from decades ago. That picture is a lie.
It is not.
That picture is a complete...
It's done by the same people who make Harry Potter look 8.
That picture is a complete... That's like that Imus press photo they were using where he's rippling with muscles and had a full head of dark brown hair.
Are you saying Carl Click is bald?
I'm not saying that at all. No. You said that. I didn't say that.
I don't think you'd let him be an anchorman if he was all bald.
No, this is
bald anchors.
No, who? Name one.
Walter Cronkite was bald, wasn't he?
He's still alive.
There's
and he's got hair.
Guy on that morning
well,
show.
Are we talking about dead anchors or live ones?
No, live. I don't know. Ed Bradley was bald, but he's a black guy and they can pull it off. White guys can't really be bald. Not on TV. It looks creepy. Just like this, it's like anchor. Just like this, you know, the anchor guys never have beards ever. You'll never see a TV anchor with a beard again, unless black guy Ed Bradley pulled it off. I don't think anybody else does it. You gotta have hair on your head.
Unless you're back in the 70s, where everyone had facial hair, scary mustaches.
But I mean now, but there's some sort of transmogrification that's happening. Not now. It's like with Mormons. You know, there was a time when everybody in the Mormon church grew a long beard to emulate the example of Brigham Young. Now, you don't ever see a Mormon with a beard. That never happened.
So that's probably in Carl Click's contract that he must have hair.
Well, it's a weird thing. Like, if you were an anchor, I wonder if you were a television anchor and you just started growing a beard, if they'd stop it. Like, if they'd say, hold on now, and if they'd just step in and make sure that it didn't happen.
Maybe they wouldn't mind the beard, but the growing period, when it just looks like a constant 5 o'clock shadow.
Keep it, You just sort of keep it, you know, you keep it close, and then you keep it trimmed as it comes in. You don't get the neck beard, but I mean, you know, just where it's first it's the 5 o'clock shadow, like you do it over the course of a vacation, maybe. Come back, a little bristly.
I don't have that problem.
No.
We should try and coerce some kind of local anchor to grow a beard.
We should offer to give money to children.
That always works.
Cancer children who don't have any hair of their own. But if you grow hair, we will give them money.
It would be their last wish.
When Carl, when Carl clicks in the studio, let's do it. And let's find a sickly child to bring in, who will then look up, Mr. Click, would you...
Mr. Click.
I can barely stand. And then, you know, and then
that's
we'll...
That's terrible, Rick. You're a bad person.
No. I mean, it's for the larger good. I don't know what we're doing here.
I missed this whole segment. I was out getting news, and I
gallivanting around.
You're talking to people at K2.
Well, you know, I didn't expect him to call in. Scotty just put him on hold. So we're so out of time here, but we got to take Mr. Skin before the break. So, and then the clock is all screwed. So here's what we're gonna just real quickly though. This thing about the anchors and no beards and having the hair. This is like that conversation yesterday about rock stars all mysteriously having the full head of hair.
Oh, let's please.
I'm not rehashing it. I'm just saying it's like TV anchors. You don't really think about it until you start to look and you go, you know what? Every TV anchor has hair. You got to wonder about that. Maybe they have access to some secret gene pool that the rest of us don't think that we're kept out of.
Well, no, they probably keep some hair in back of the set and they have somebody put it on you when they do their makeup.
Probably. You know, Dane Cook, that can't be his real hair.
What about Sam Donaldson? He was going bald and they put that... Really
he has the worst toupee. He has the worst toupee on earth.
I don't think he works anymore.
At all?
No.
Anywhere?
He's retired.
You suppose he stands out on his front porch when the paperboy goes,
Donald.
One more thing, Mr. Paperboy. Hold on. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from MrSkin.com, the online celebrity nudity database. Our good friend, the one, the only Mr. Skin. Why, hello, sir. How are you?
Hey, Rick. How's it going?
Oh, busy, hot, but, you know, it is what it is. We're trying to stay inside and soak up the air conditioning, my friend.
I hear you. Same here in Chicago.
I know you were on vacation for a while.
Yeah.
Everybody's busy, so I know there's a whole lot that's open, a whole lot that's out there. So So what have we missed? What's that? Who's out there now? Who's going to be out there?
Well, the big movie in theaters this... weekend is Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. Now, you're not going to see any nudity, of course, in Harry Potter, but it's funny. A lot of the women that are in the Harry Potter movies have been naked. You know, they got a lot of these older UK actresses that Maggie Smith, to name one. You know, a number of these actresses have done nudity in their past. And one of the new ones for this edition of the Harry Potter series, Helena Bonham Carter, will be in this new movie, and she actually, if people don't know her, she was the girl in Fight Club,
right.
And she was also in Planet of the Apes. She was known for that movie, too, but in 1997, she did a movie called The Wings of the Dove, and an hour and 29 minutes in, she gets completely nude. It's a very good nude scene, so in honor of Harry Potter and the new character that Helena Bonham Carter plays, good nudity in her past, and actually this week we're putting together a list of the top 10, I'm going to try to do it this weekend, the top 10 girls that have been in Harry Potter movies who've done nudity. So it should be a very timely top 10 list for our website.
Fantastic.
So, yes. Also opening in limited release this weekend is a movie called Interview, starring British babe Sienna Miller. And she has a couple good nude scenes, 56 minutes in, an hour and 14 minutes in, showing her backside. She, of course, is the girl that had the whole run-in. The tabloids loved her thing with Jude Law and how he ended up...
I know her from. Is she like a home wrecker? Is that her?
Well, she's her home was wrecked.
Ah, but, okay, got it.
But she's very hot, and she's naked in this movie Interview. Her best movie, though, is a movie she did in 2004 called Alfie, in which she is very topless, but this is a decent nudity. The movie's Interview, it'll be in theaters this week. The hottest, number one most searched girl at MrSkin.com right now is Megan Fox, because of the movie Transformers.
Yeah.
And everyone wants to know, they're coming to our website searching her to see, has she been naked? The answer, unfortunately, is no. She's best known for the TV show, before Transformers, the TV show Hope and Faith. She played the daughter of Hope Faith on the show. Kelly Ripa's also on that show. She has some nice bikini shots. She had amazing bikini moment in 2.5 Men with Charlie Sheen, but has yet to do a nude scene. So all you people coming to MrSkin.com wondering about Megan Fox, give her some time. No nudity yet, from her, but I know guys would go nuts if she'd do a nude scene.
There's always the future, my friend.
my nudity crystal ball sees skin for her, but we're going to have to wait a little while.
Excellent. All right, the online celebrity nudity database is MrSkin.com. As always, it's a pleasure, Mr. Skin. Thank you, my friend.
Take care, Rick.
There you go, MrSkin.com. Excellent. All right, there you go. Is Helena Bonham Carter, is she Beatrix Lestrange? Is she, what's her name, what's his name in Harry Potter?
I'm not sure. I heard she was going to be in it.
Sirius Black's crazy half cousin or half whatever, and she was married to what's his name? Never mind. I'm going to quit this line.
Sure, yeah, that's it. Yeah.
I think she plays Beatrix Lestrange, who is crazy and who and there's that whole torture sequence.
She does.
Yeah. All right. That's great. I'm all over that. All right, and this is also Harry Potter and...
How come those kids have been airbrushed to make them look 5 years younger than
Well, that's we were talking about that yesterday. I really strongly suspect that they use CGI to make these kids younger. Now, the creepy thing, and then we'll break. The creepy thing is, and I noted this picture right here, this Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, I'm looking at the New York Times, but it's the movie poster, where it's Harry, and then he's flanked, they're like in formation by everybody, and there's what's-her-name, Emma Watson, who plays Hermione Granger.
Mm-hmm.
The creepy thing is... There are a limited number of posters that they put up for this movie that they then pulled off the market because people started commenting on it, where her bust line has been augmented through, like, Photoshop.
Is it flattened at this point?
Yeah. I mean, you know, she's, you know, whatever. She's, like, 16, 17, whatever, coming into womanhood. But there's some photos that they made for drooling fanboys, clearly, where they ratcheted that up from, like, you know, whatever, one size to another size. And then I think people noted that, like, hey, you look like perverts. And so they pulled that off the market, so... All right.
It's okay to show people with guns.
Oh, the hypocrisy. Where's Michael Medved when we need him? All right. Hey, Joel Siegel died. We never talked about that.
Joel Siegel died about a week ago. Well, a lot of things happen that we never get to. Not that we don't mean to. Not that they're not in the stack. We just never get there.
We need a longer show.
And I was just thinking, well, that would be a bad idea, too.
Thank you, Tim.
Maybe we just need two stations to do the show.
As much as we're
on.
Tempted. Or two or three. We don't have to be limited to one market now, do we?
No, we don't.
All it takes is a little satellite adjustment. There are plenty of them up there circling the globe.
Gotta take a break here. 503-733-2970. Here's David Allen Coe back after this. Why, hello, it's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. I think we ought to have some sort of a Susan Reynolds cam, so we could just watch her expression as Sarah's telling about having a grown man's junk waved around like inches in front of her while she was 17 drinking illegally in a hotel room.
I thought it was 16.
In West Bremerton. Her friend was 16. How old were you? 17?
No, I was 16. My friend was 17.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. She was a year ahead of me.
She was better. Kind of the Eddie Haskell.
She was the mature one. Yeah. You probably were the Eddie Haskell type. Do you even know what that means?
Oh, no.
God. Really?
There was a program in the days of Black and White television.
On a kinescope device from many... You've seen Singles like 100 times.
Recorded on the Dumont Electric cam.
And there was... From DeSoto. I can't even do that. I don't even know how to...
That's back on TV.
I don't know how to simulate
DeSoto
that.
DeSoto presents...
Really?
DeSoto presents...
I don't even know how to simulate that sound. You've seen Singles like 100 times where Matt Dillon says... The hat looks very nice, and I don't mean that in an Eddie Haskell kind of way.
Yeah.
Do you know what that means?
No, I just know the line.
Eddie Haskell, okay, I got to do a little brief history lesson. Because here's the thing, here's why I feel old. Because I was watching an episode of The Wire a couple weeks ago on HBO, which is the second best program on television. And there was a cop who had this sort of juvenile delinquent, and anyway, blah, 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 series of events, and they were eating a meal together. And... The juvenile delinquent says something to, like, the store clerk and was sort of polite. And the cop says, oh, I see, that's your Eddie Haskell act. And the kid's like, Eddie Haskell, who's that? You know, it has no idea. And the cop's like, never mind, you know, I'm just old. Eddie Haskell was Wally Cleaver's best friend on Leave It to Beaver. Eddie Haskell was probably 15, maybe, older than the Beaver, certainly, and used to just totally, like, beat up Beaver Cleaver. You know, she used to, like, give him the business, as they say, give him, like, you know, noogies and, like, shove him and was, like, mean to him. But and he was just a jerk. He was an ass. and he was just a total dick. But whenever a parent or an adult would appear, it's like the halo suddenly just appeared over his head, and he was just like, why, gosh, Mrs. Cleaver, I would love some pie and a glass of milk. That would be swell. And then as soon as Mrs. Cleaver was out, he was like kicking Beaver in the nuts. And, you know, and like kicking...
Not really, though.
Not really.
They didn't allow that back then. No, people didn't have nuts.
No. It was a nutless time. But he would like, shove him down a staircase or like, you know, poke him in the eye or something. Or
sit on a whoopee cushion.
Do something terrible. So that's an Eddie Haskell kind of way. Eddie Haskell is where he would just be really insincere. He was like the captain insincere. So, okay. Eh. Oh, by the way, I just have to read this one email. This says, Rick, let's see, where did it go? Rick, I had to turn my radio down for a conversation, and I apologize for my lax attention. Were you just talking to Colonel Klink from Hogan's Heroes? That should totally be Carl Klink's.
Hogan's Heroes, to show you why life at Stalag 13 is a blast.
Oh, God.
Where else do the prisoners take pot shots at people?
Hey, watch where you're shooting!
Where else is the Commandant the fall guy? And where else could you find Sergeant Schultz?
That should totally be Carl Klick's theme song. Make it the Hogan's Heroes theme song. All right, there you go. All right, 503-733-2... Oh, I hope he's not Jewish. That might be awkward. Well, never mind.
Huckenstein?
Welcoming him at the... Let's play the Hogan's Heroes
That would be
song
bad.
And welcome Carl Klick to the Rick Emerson.
Yeah, he's totally... Well, you're insinuating that everyone in television is...
No. I'm just saying I don't know anything about him. I have no knowledge of him. I know nothing about him. Somebody look at me, she's like Carl Klickbaum or something. I could just see him. Can't you see us doing that? We're totally the show that would do it too. Welcome some guest with a Hogan's Heroes theme because we think
that
it's hilarious for some other reason that he's like, yeah, he's Carl Klickberg. All right, ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, here's the Reverend Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Well, if Carl Klick was here right now, he'd be telling you about 850 firefighters who are making progress trying to save the city of Burns from burning. They have 35,000 acres on fire, which isn't too bad because most of that area of Oregon, well, there's nothing living there anyway, except for a bunch of grasshoppers. And why would anybody move to a place called Burns anyway? And what do they do there for a living? We'll never know. I think I already did this. Well, here's a story that we've been putting up that we should have done earlier. A porn star is being sued for using an old school chum's name in a professional X-rated stage
name. So great.
This comes to us from Texas. 25-year-old Laura Madden has appeared in at least 15 skin flicks since 2004 using the alias Savette Wimbley.
Savette Wimbley? I thought you were going to say Laura Madden was her name.
Savette Wimbley.
All right, I'm Googling her right now as, you know, for news reasons of news.
Well, now the real Savette Wimbley is suing her and an adult film studio for an invasion of privacy and emotional distress.
How do you spell Savette?
S-Y-B-E-T-T-E. That sounds like some weird hippie name,
and
doesn't
then
it?
Wimbley.
Wimbley.
Like Wembley, but with an I?
Yes. Wimberly, I should say.
Wimberly.
W-I-M-B-E-R-L-Y.
Oh, no, Google corrected me.
L-Y. Well, Google is
I'm
smart.
Looking at this now. This is for, again, for reasons of news. All right, let me just see if she is,
All of you in the IT department?
Oh, she's, yeah, she's beautiful. All right. Well, there you go.
She's
okay.
Quite a dish, isn't she?
She is.
Her lawyer said, really? On a weekly, if not daily basis, my client has to deal with odd phone calls, former classmates who didn't know her, sending her emails about whether or not she's now in the adult film industry, and for a general lack of safety for her. Laura Madden appears in videos produced and distributed by Vivid Entertainment, a producer of famous videos, including those starring Jenna Jameson, Brianna Banks, and Tara Patrick. The real Savette Wimbley is asking for monetary damages and an injunction to stop Madden from using her name. Well, the president is introducing the White House media to a brand new briefing room today. It's beautiful. He says he likes the press corps very, very much.
The relationship between the president and the press is a unique relationship, and it's a necessary relationship. Sometimes you don't like the decisions I make, and sometimes I don't like the way you write about the decisions. But nevertheless, it's a really important part of our process.
Oh, it's not just sometimes, Mr. President. He now believes that future generations will benefit from the modern press room, the press room of tomorrow.
And I think it's going to benefit future presidents and future White House press corps. to be working in modern conditions, conditions where, you know, a fellow like me would feel comfortable coming in here and answering a few questions without losing 20 pounds.
I don't know what that means.
I don't know. I wish I asked Lisa Goddard tomorrow. I got nothing.
A new law in Texas hopes to encourage more public schools to study the Bible. They already passed this law. As a matter of fact, the governor signed this bill yesterday.
Where?
Texas. They want them to teach the Bible in public schools.
Wait, let me guess. Is this as a historical document?
Apparently so.
We've worked with school districts in our legal department to educate them on this issue, but I think that in order to make people realize that they're allowed to do this, having a state law on this issue makes it pretty clear.
Does he say why?
Well, because God created everything.
We've worked with school districts in our league. We looked at the works of Shakespeare. There's more than 1,300 biblical references. And what we've seen over the years is that students that have some biblical knowledge have a major educational advantage over those that do not.
What? In Texas, I suppose.
All right.
Well, they want people to know more about the Bible.
You know, the Bible says that unicorns existed.
Oh, is that true? What page
is
that?
It is true. If you look it up in the Bible, you have a King James Bible around the house?
Not anymore.
I
have various Bibles.
No, it escapes me now. I have to look at the actual verse. But you know, the King James Bible refers to God creating unicorns. Hmm. I have to find it, and I have to go. Now I have to go discover exactly what. Hold on, let me.
Oh, that's too bad.
Hold on, let me look right now. I used to know it. It's one of those things you read as a kid, and you. Like, you don't realize how retarded and insane it is until later when you're, like, 16. You're like, wait a minute. Does the Bible say there are unicorns? Let's see. Here we go. Let me just check here. Unicorns. Unicorns in the Bible. There's a whole entry on it. Unicorns in the Bible. Job 39, verses 9 to 12. Mentions the unicorn. All right. Well, in any event, I'm not going to worry.
I always like that song.
Doesn't matter. You know what? I don't even care.
What song? The Last Unicorn?
The Unicorn song.
No. He's talking about that Irish song, right?
You take some green alligators and
long-neck geese.
I always thought it was geese.
Some
humpy back cows.
Long-neck geese.
Oh, my gosh. I love The Last Unicorn song by America. Have you heard that?
This isn't the same one.
No. Wait, who are you? What are you talking about? A song by America? Are you Craig Adams?
Yeah, they did. They did the soundtrack.
I thought they did Sister Golden Hair.
Okay, but it's just weirding me out that Sarah's talking about that. Why do you know a song by the group America? That's just strange.
I love America.
Really?
Do you have anything from Bread?
See.
Yeah, seriously. Start talking to us about Brewer and Shipley.
Have you ever seen The Last Unicorn?
No.
Oh, my God.
Is it a movie?
Yeah, it's from the 80s.
Is it a movie in which they took a horse and glued a stick onto its head on the film set?
Ice cream cone.
This is giving people flashbacks. I swear,
seriously.
I watch this every weekend.
I think the song
is... Now, but what is the deal with this movie?
It was made in the 80s, and it's the last unicorn.
Uh-huh.
They look like, I don't know, like little precious moments animals. And it has a bunch of famous people who are in it. Jeff Bridges plays the one of the main characters. Angela Lansbury's in it as the evil witch. It's super cool. And so all the unicorns have been killed by the Red Bull, and they're all driven into the ocean, and they're in the waves. And the Red Bull keeps them there, so the last unicorn's trying to find her her family.
Is there some moment where where the unicorn runs down a rainbow?
No rainbows. It isn't.
Rainbows
are
from the 70s.
It's actually...
Everything had a rainbow on it.
It's true.
It's a pretty dark movie, actually, because she gets captured by an evil witch who's then eaten to death by a giant vulture.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds too violent.
All right.
I'm going to let you borrow that, Rick Emerson. I own this movie.
Okay.
Do you find me? What are you looking for?
No, now it's bugging me. It's bugging me. Now I feel like I got to find the unicorn verse. That's one of the... Numbers 23:22. God hath brought them out of Egypt. He hath as if it were the strength of a unicorn.
What
does that even mean? Why would God be talking about unicorns? That doesn't even make any sense.
Maybe it was a slow day for God.
Seriously. Maybe there's a verse where he talks about basilopes. All right. I don't even know what we're doing. It seems like we wandered off into a wilderness there.
Why don't you take a little break and go back to the newsroom for a while?
All right. Hi, you're listening to KCMD Portland, by the way. Let's welcome out of the Rick Emerson Show from FilmFeverRadio.com with a review of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. This is
the Order of Phoenix.
The unicorn's on the brain. Our good friend Scott Daly. Hello, sir. How are you today?
I'm okay. How are you guys doing over there?
I don't know.
Scott Daly, do you remember The Last Unicorn?
Vaguely, I do, yes.
Okay.
Yes. I never saw it, but I believe it's one of the VHS tapes that made the rotation on my sister's playlist when we were growing up. So, yeah, I never got into it, though. Never dug the unicorn.
You may have mentioned this. Now, is it sort of like a Black Stallion kind of a thing where a child bonds with a unicorn and has to rescue it from man?
No, it's not a child. No, the unicorn is on this quest on its own. It says a brave unicorn and a magician fight an evil king who's obsessed with attempting to capture all of the world's unicorns.
Rick, I would probably compare more to something like Neverending Story than Black Stallion.
I know that. I have no fault with the Neverending Story.
No, nor do I.
Everyone loves the Neverending Story.
Fantastic.
All right. So you have seen Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix.
I have indeed, sir.
All right, so what say ye?
Well, I need to say this, I need to preface this by saying that I have not read the books. Contrary to what Aaron says, I do read books. I just haven't read the Harry
contrary
Potter.
Contrary to what Aaron says, does Aaron claim, is it a matter of contention whether or not you read books?
Yes, it is, because I haven't read the Harry Potter books. Apparently, I am not, I don't read at all, which is untrue. I'm currently reading All the President's Men, by the way.
I will say this. I'm not, then again, people can read them or not. It's their choice.
Yeah.
The Harry Potter books are fantastic, though. They're among the finest fiction of the last decade.
You know, I tried to bust of years ago. I tried to start to read the first one, and it just didn't grab me. So, but I have seen all the films, and I got to say, this latest one is the shortest of the bunch. It's 138 minutes. Which is odd because, from what I understand, it's probably the largest book of the series.
Right.
So there was a lot that was cut. I could just tell by watching it.
Yeah, I mean, Order of the Phoenix is like an 800-page novel. It is. I don't think it's the longest. Well, no, it is the longest actually because Half-Blood Prince actually was shorter. That was only 700. So yeah, it is. I think at this point the longest of all the six books that currently exist. Yeah.
So as a book in the series, I can't comment on how it works. But as a film in the series, I will say effects-wise, it's fantastic. It's just phenomenal. All the characters have really kind of brought their own to it. They're very comfortable in their own skin. Ralph Fiennes returns as Voldemort, which is just evil at his best.
Right.
Fantastic. And, of course, my favorite character, or my favorite actor, is Alan Rickman as Professor Snape.
Yep.
Just.
He's great. And every time I go to see a Harry Potter film, I have to sit through my wife sitting there talking about how hot she finds Snape to be, which is just weird and geeky. Sarah's nodding her head. Really?
Well, just Alan Rickman in general.
Now, do you find is it Alan Rickman or is it Snape?
It's Alan Rickman.
Because I know that, like, my wife has this whole thing where she doesn't find James Gandolfini hot, but she finds Tony Soprano hot.
No, because I don't particularly like the way he looks in those movies. I'm not a big fan of, like, long hair.
The big curtain of greasy hair.
Yeah.
So, so it's Alan Rickman that you find to be great.
Yeah, in Love Actually, come on.
Oh, dude, no, he's great. No, he's. I would not disagree with that.
Yeah.
So, okay.
So anyway, so character wise, and of course the three main actors, Daniel Radcliffe, Emma Watson, and Rupert Grint are fantastic again. But the film kind of feels like, and again, being a really fat book, I'm sure there's a ton more to it, but the film itself kind of feels like it's a bridge, if you will, to the next two films, which are probably just going to be insane and completely dark and messed up. I've heard a lot of people say that The Order of Phoenix is their favorite Harry Potter film.
It's my favorite, actually.
Favorite Harry Potter book. I've even heard people say it's their favorite film. Of the five, and I don't know if I agree with that. I still really, really like the Goblet of Fire.
Right.
But it fits nicely in the order of things. But it's kind of an introduction to leading up to the final two.
That was going to be my question. Does it feel? I mean, I'm not going to say does it have a cliffhanger ending because obviously we know there are two more books. But I mean, does it stand alone as a film? Does it leave you sort of? Are you satisfied at the end? I mean, is it enough to be like, okay, great, now I'll wait for the other two?
It does. You kind of go into thinking, okay, cool, I'm glad I saw that. I learned a little more about Harry Potter. Learned a lot more about Snape.
All right.
And his route and Potter's relationship with Sirius Black, brilliantly played once again by Gary Oldman.
Yeah.
But you just kind of walk away thinking, okay, well, now that's done. let's bring on the last two. Let's bring on the third act of the Harry Potter world. I would say that as a film, the Order of the Phoenix probably almost wraps up Act Two if you put all seven films together as a three act production.
I could see that because
Act Three, we're getting ready to get Act Three with Book Six. And
yeah,
seven.
I could see that because this is when things really start to fall apart and the uprising really starts to happen. And
you can see things. You can see the doom coming. The impending. Whatever it's going to be, and again, having not read the six books, I know what happens in the six book. I know an important part.
How's Helena Bonham Carter?
Oh, she's fantastic. She's not in it nearly enough as she should be. Maybe total screen time is 10 minutes, but boy, when you first saw her on screen, I was like, oh, I love that woman.
Excellent, wonderful, cool. Is the review up at the Film People Radio now, or is it going to be?
It's going to be up on our show this week, but Aaron has his review up at geekinthecity.com.
Cool.
But our show is going to have. Now, this week's show is only going to have a review of Harry Potter. We're going to do our favorite book to film adaptations.
Cool.
So,
excellent. All right.
So, I would say yes. If you're a Harry Potter fan, you're going to go see it. It's a very, very entertaining, very good film. But you don't feel quite as fulfilled when you leave the theater as you do the other ones.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to it. All right. FilmFeverRadio.com. Scott Daly. Thanks, my friend. All right. There you go. Scott Daly, kids. 503-733-2970 is our phone number. 503-733-2970. Before we do anything else here. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson radio program. How can I help you, sir?
Hey, Rick. I love you all. Sarah was just talking about the unicorn movie.
You would not believe the amount of email I'm now getting about the last unicorn. Was this an animated movie?
Yes, it was. It's the same animators that did the Hobbit movies.
That's what somebody, they showed me a screen capture, and it does look like that.
Oh,
yeah.
The animated Hobbit movies were terrible.
You know, here's the thing about that, I say, just leaping headlong into the geeky chasm
of
blackness.
Yeah, here we go, right.
The Hobbit movie is terrible now, but it is. It's one of those things where I wish I could see it now and view it the way it looked as a kid. Because when I was a kid, that Rankin-Bass Hobbit movie as a kid seemed so cool.
Oh well, see, that's the problem. I was probably I'm 47, so I saw it. I don't know when that came out, but I mean, yeah, when I saw it, it was like watching Saturday morning cartoons for 2 or 3 hours. But younger. Eyes. I mean, just like, well, then how old were you when you saw Star Wars for the first time? Let's go totally geek.
I'm actually the wrong guy to ask about this because unlike most geeks, I didn't see Star Wars until later because my mom was going through this sort of religious nutcase phase. And my mom's response was, there is only one force in the galaxy and it's Jesus Christ. And so I had to wait until those movies started turning up. And to this day, actually, I don't know if they were legal or if they were bootleg, but my neighbor across the street had a Betamax VCR, and he had these copies of the original trilogy, which in retrospect, I don't know if they must have been pirated, because I don't know if those were actually out on videotape at that time, even Betamax. But my friend Shane, who lived across the street, had these copies of the first trilogy, and I ended up seeing those over at his house. But, I mean, it was a couple years after the fact. So I missed the theatrical experience for most of that, because my mom just wouldn't let me go. So I was, I don't know, but I was, 12, 13, something like that.
Right. Well, the reason I called is because, Sarah's talking about this unicorn movie, and she's saying it's in the 80s. I don't know if that's early or late 80s. And I forget how old she is, but I'm just visualizing Sarah at like maybe 6 years old, sitting on her bed with the My Little Pony, brushing its hair and everything,
singing along to the songs.
What?
I would sing along to all the songs.
Yeah,
I'm 82.
That's what I'm saying. No, I'm. What do you mean creepy?
Nothing. I didn't say that.
No, that was Rick.
That's bad. Shame on you, Rick Emerson.
All right.
Great show.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. There you go. That call just sort of seemed to disintegrate underneath
us
there.
He was trying to be nice.
It started strong, and then I just felt like we were on, like, Indiana Jones doing the... doing that, what is it, the name of God or whatever it is, where the things are crumbling out from underneath him?
I'm just, I seem a little obsessed with this, and I kind of am. I just am really shocked that you haven't seen The Last Unicorn.
No, I...
And that you wouldn't love it.
And it came out when, 82?
82.
Well, I think maybe at the time, I know I already asked this, but my brain is kind of foggy today. Was it a Disney film?
No.
It's kind of surprising to me that I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it had, Alan Arkin, Jeff Bridges, Mia Farrow, she played the voice of the unicorn.
Really?
Mm-hmm, Angela Lansbury.
Interesting.
Yeah, Christopher Lee.
All right.
It's very interesting.
Ancient Chinese secret, eh? Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey there.
Hey, what's up?
I'm just driving along at my work, and my day hasn't been complete because I haven't heard Scotty J drunk audio yet.
Oh, I'm well. We'll do it into the break, sir.
All right, sounds great.
All right, thank you. Hey, speaking of Scotty J, though. Let's...
Scotty J.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Please, can I kiss you on the mouth? Please let me.
Good morning, Metolia.
Genius.
All right, I'm even laughing at that.
That's fantastic. That's from Randy.
Randy?
That's Randy who made that. So, God bless you, sir.
Randy.
Hey, Scotty J, how are you?
I'm doing great, Rick.
Are you really?
No.
You're a little hung today, aren't
no,
you?
No, I'm fine.
A little hungover.
Are you fine?
Sure.
All right. How is...
It's going great.
You want to see
contact info.
I haven't even asked you anything. You don't even know what I'm asking about.
Okay, try it.
No, you do. I'm talking about Gabe Kaplan.
None.
When is the last time you smoked?
Yesterday.
Don't lie.
All right. Was it yesterday?
You did it today.
No, yesterday I had 4. I fell off the wagon a little.
Are you still wearing the patch every day?
Yeah.
Were you wearing the patch yesterday when you smoked?
No, I took it off. Put it in my mouth, chewed it.
Don't be an ass.
Took it off.
Why?
Because I needed a smoke.
What happens if you smoke when you have the patch on?
Overdose.
Double the pleasure.
Well, not an overdose. It
won't
kill you.
You'll just feel faint, probably.
You don't know?
I don't want to try either.
But I mean...
the way you said that.
This is one of those days where you're being difficult, and I'm just trying to find out some information. So let's start from the beginning. Now, I wasn't even going to talk about this. When did you first put the patch on?
I believe Monday, but
this past Monday, the day before yesterday.
Yes, but I only had 2 smokes on Sunday.
Okay, but you put the patch on Monday, so you lasted one day. Even with the goddamn patch, you lasted one day, and then you took the patch off.
But so if you're trying to quit smoking, why didn't you do the OMSI thing?
I was just gonna get to that, you bastard. I was just gonna get to that.
Let's speed it up there, Chachi.
Seriously. No, because I don't know what to be agog at first. A, that he puts the patch on and then, well, I'm gonna take this off and peels the patch off for the sole purpose of smoking. Also, I wanna know what happens if you smoke while wearing the patch. Obviously it's not gonna kill you, or they couldn't market it. They couldn't sell it if that was the case.
Too much of a nicotine rush.
Yeah, okay, but what happens though? What are the effects?
You feel shaky.
Well then do you know that?
I know just from taking it off and having a smoke, a few minutes later that you still feel shaky, so
Jesus. Yeah. All right. Okay. Now I'm gonna put this to Sarah and if necessary to the people.
Yes, sir.
Is it not a fact? A historic fact.
Oh, historic.
Or historical. I never know which one is right. Is it not a fact that Scotty, in the studio, while rejecting our offer to help him quit smoking, because, quote, he didn't feel like he'd wanted to, agreed on this program in public that the next time he did feel like smoking, he would let us do it? Did he not make that pledge right there?
And I agree. I want to quit. So
But you deceived us. You didn't tell us about it.
Well, I was feeling a little bit under the weather on Sunday, and I said, this is a good time to put the Duke.
But you know what? But you stood right there, and you promised us. You said, look, I don't want to quit right now, but I'll tell you, when I do feel like I want to quit, I will let the Rick Emerson Show do it.
Okay, well, I told you Monday.
Okay, but all right.
Is it
so,
too late to call OMSI?
No, I'm saying so. So you are now agreeing. It is
at your mercy. I'm quitting.
Okay, but it is in our hands to determine how you quit.
Sure, but the patch seems to be working.
It doesn't seem to be working. You took it off. Don't be a dick. You took it off yesterday. You took it off yesterday.
If I would have left
Maybe
it on.
The patch is working, but the owner of the patch is completely defective. Let's put it that way. The owner of the patch doesn't seem to work at all.
Hey, I resemble that. Okay.
I don't think he did that on accident.
No, I'm just saying. Okay, so the patch may work. Its owner doesn't work at all. So here's the thing. So, I'm going to stop now because we're getting just too ahead. I haven't even gotten to the thing I was going to ask you about.
Gabe.
Oh, for the love of God. So, you are wearing the patch today. So, the patch obviously
works for a while.
Okay, but here's the thing. It only works if you keep it on and you took it off yesterday. You lasted a day. You've had it off for 33% of the time that you've been using it. You've had it off for a full third of the time.
So is it fair to say 33% less smokes?
No. It,
It's a way of weaning.
I don't think it works that way.
Weaning off.
No. Okay, no. So here's what we're going to do. By your own acknowledgement, it is now up to the Rick Emerson Show. We get to pick the method by which you quit smoking.
Okay.
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 Okay. So now I'm going to throw out everything else we were going to do. So now the phone lines are now open. It is 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. And here's the deal. We need to come up with some method by which Scotty will be discouraged from smoking any further. You have acknowledged this. This is a thing you have agreed to do.
I'm not going to take some punishment.
No. That is exactly the agreement was you would let the Rick Emerson Show determine how you quit smoking.
Yeah, whether it be, you know, the
there were none of these strictures put on in advance.
The needle thing, you,
there were none
that
of
is.
None of these.
Scotty, we wouldn't do anything that would hurt.
We're not going to do anything. We're not going to brand you. But obviously, we're not going to do anything that's going to physically damage you. Clearly,
the needle every time.
But you did. But no. But you ceded to us the right to determine how you quit smoking.
Okay.
We will not do anything that causes you permanent physical harm.
All right then.
All right. So the phone lines are now open. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. We now need to arrive at a method by which Scotty will quit smoking. So, Sarah, how do you want to do this?
We've got to take a break.
We're going to break here. If you're on hold, stay there. Scotty will just stay in here with us. It's 503-733-2970. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. 503-733-2970 is the number here. And when we return, we will take your phone calls about how Scotty may, in fact, finally quit smoking. You stay right there.
What are some words that would describe Vanilla Ice's personality? Having met him like you did.
Oh, dude, totally persuasive, totally wants you to believe his ice. He wants to just slide along with his.
Why do you want Vanilla Ice to be your brother?
God damn it, this guy is joy at everything. Me?
Yeah.
Scotty J, Vanilla Ice, my brother?
What'd you think of the women, though? At least the women were hot.
Hell yes.
Hell
yes.
What were your thoughts on the women of Outlaws?
The women of Outlaws tonight were un-freaking believable.
What was hot about them? Wait for it.
Ass.
There you go. Scotty was just telling us during the break how he used to go to a shrink, but he stopped because he is healed and everything in his life is on an even keel. I forgot to mention this, by the way. I have my new shrink appointment tonight. So,
is it a man or woman?
It's a woman. Because I my experience is I tend to work better with female shrinks. Because
they're more nurturing.
They are. What is it I'm trying to say?
Tell
I'm
me
trying
why
to make a joke with suckle
way.
In it. I was going to say suckle from the. Suckle from the breast of healing. No, there's no, it's not funny. No, because, I went to that guy who turned out to be an ass, and who turns out my insurance didn't cover, so I owe him like $9 million. And then they scheduled that appointment, it was like 7 weeks out, and then she canceled that morning. I'm sick, I can't get to work. And so now, that was like now 11 weeks ago. So this place is like 160th and Stark or something in Southeast, right by that god-awful bingo hall where Sarah and I used to do that hideous program and we were unemployed. So that'll be fun.
Is that program ever coming back?
No.
I'm sorry. B9.
All right. So, Tim, I don't know if you were here for this last time. I think you were out there working on something. So, Scotty... a few weeks ago on this program, we tried to get Scotty to quit because OMSI wanted somebody that they could use as sort of a case study of quitting smoking.
Oh.
And we brought Scotty. We said, Scotty, OMSI wants to help you. And Scotty gave us this whole speech about how, Rick, I'm just not ready to quit. I don't want to quit right now, and so it would be wrong and disingenuous to try. Something like
and
that.
American.
With smaller words. Yeah. I said, that's fine. But then we extracted from him on air a promise that the next time he felt that he wanted to try, mm-hmm. when he was ready to quit smoking, he would let we, the Rick Emerson Show, guide the method by which he quit smoking. Now, we have promised not to do anything that would cause him physical harm, obviously. But beyond that, we are now in sole control of choosing how Scotty quit smoking. Because Scotty has been using the patch for the last couple days, although he started using it on Monday, and on Tuesday he peeled it off so he could smoke. So that's not really working out. So have you, before we take advice from the audience, Tim, and then we'll do some news here in a few, have ye advice on how Scotty might quit smoking? What is your suggestion, Tim?
I would say go cold turkey.
Well, that's, but there has to be inducement. In other words, something has to happen if he smokes again. There has to be some sort of punishment if he smokes.
See, I knew that's what you were looking for, the punishment.
No, we said no physical harm.
No, there's no physical harm. We won't physically harm
you. I'll tell
you
what the punishment is. Not having the patch or something like that, the nicotine withdrawals are just
You don't get
punishment.
To decide what the punishment is because that's not working for you. Uh-huh. So
you'll have to dance with those two ladies in the suburbs.
See, that's the kind of thing, that's the kind of out-of-the-box thinking we need, Tim. Mm. Something like that. So we'll get a few of these calls, then we'll do some news. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Radio Show. Hello.
Actually, my idea was to keep him in the box as opposed to out-of-the-box suggestions. Since this is being done through OMSI,
yeah.
We could actually do a teaching exhibit and put him inside of a Plexi booth, inside of the children, you know, where they get to go through and there's
right.
all these interactive. And, they could just show Scotty in there fidgeting and everything, you know, trying to quit, you know.
Like a withdrawal box. We put him in.
that would be horrible.
Well, not only that, but I thought we could also do an audio-visual exhibit next door to that to dissuade them from drinking.
Yeah, where you push the button.
Yeah,
I'm just not ready to do that.
And there's
yet.
Normal Scotty, and then you push the second button, and you get, you know.
No, we're not trying to make Scotty quit drinking. We're just there. It's just there to show children what happens when you let people go out drinking. And the way they sound.
That's a fair point. All right.
And the video. Yeah. You got all the materials right
now,
there.
So true. They can press a button and they'll get this speech. Or
the <All right>.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. By which method should Scotty quit smoking?
Well, I really liked electric shock, but you took that away from me.
Well, it can't be something that causes actual physical harm.
Well, shock doesn't cause harm. It just pains a little.
Well, that's true. I think that would probably be ruled unacceptable, but I
do have to say, though, as a therapist, your suckle from the breast of healing was really creepy.
I was trying to find some from the teat of mental health.
But
the,
my
the
other
teat
suggestion,
of learning. Yeah.
As far as punishment,
uh-huh.
The best one would probably be that every cigarette he smokes, he gives $5 to his drink hoe. The other one would be that he has to go to amateur night at Silverado and audition to be a stripper.
Oh,
forget
there you
about
go.
It.
There, that's a
he's
great
got,
idea.
He's a cute man.
No,
he's a good-looking fellow.
People don't want to see this.
We're in the ballpark. See, these ideas, we're getting close. We're getting
Scotty,
close to
you
something.
You were showing
like that.
Everyone as much of your body as they would look at.
Look
Saturday
at my
night.
Guns.
I was just showing the guns, not the
you
bowling ball.
You pulled up your pants to show off your tuna.
My ankles.
What?
It's not a tuna, by the way.
What? What are you talking about?
It's not a tuna.
What are you talking about?
Never mind.
Well, I have to bleep it then.
No.
All right. Well, never mind.
I'll tell
right.
you.
There you go. All right. We got to move on. All right. Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Because I love Scotty like a brother, I'm going to have a punishment first and get it over with, which is he should be in a plexiglass box and forced to smoke half a case of cigarettes until you can't see him in the box anymore.
Well, see, I've thought about that. I've thought about the thing that they do with kids where it's like you have to smoke the whole carton or whatever.
That doesn't work because a day or so later, your nicotine level gets back to normal again.
It doesn't work if you're allowed to decide when you stop.
Well,
yeah,
it doesn't
exactly.
make you sick.
Well,
no, he's got to turn green first. I'd take him out to, I would use an ancient Chinese secret and take him out to the Oregon College of Oriental Medicine, which has been the oldest college of oriental medicine mm-hmm. in the United States, and they will use needles and herbs on him. And
I like that idea.
Calgon.
Yeah, and that's at
Calgon.
You like it because you're a pussy. That's why you like it.
It's OCOM. It's the just look up OCOM. Google it. It's right there. They do wonderful things. And
that's
meanwhile,
a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's some pretty nice-looking doctors out there. Too.
Scotty likes it, so we can't do that. Thank
okay.
you. All right, one more, and then we'll do news with Tim Riley. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Hi, I think he should actually do something like the stripper thing. He just can't wear clothes when he smokes.
I think that's way worse for us than it is for Scotty.
That's funny.
I do like, maybe it's like strip smoking. Every time he smokes,
exactly.
he has to take off an article of clothing.
Forget it.
You're not allowed to veto anything. You made a verbal commitment, and as a man, you will honor that, I expect. You will not dishonor yourself by welching.
It's hot outside, so it might work in favor for him.
No,
but
maybe.
Eventually, you know, towards the fall, he might start regretting it.
Oh, that's true. He should totally have to come to work in just, like, boxer shorts and a wife beater.
There
like
you
in
go.
December.
Or just socks, but that's his option, you know?
No, that's, again, we're back to punishing us. All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Right.
We'll get more of these in a while. We may have to stretch this in tomorrow. Ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, the Reverend Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Well, it's your last chance to burn down the coon today because Clark County is banning all outdoor burning starting tomorrow until further notice. This ban includes all land clearing, residential, and silvicultural burning. Don't ask me what that means. Fire marshals have rescinded all burning permits prior to this ban. They can be reissued or extended when the ban is lifted. So, no more burning in the coup. Today's your last day. Have fun. Court TV is changing its name to True TV. The network on, it just announces today the name would change effective January 1st, 2008 to better reflect its emphasis on non-fictional programming. But they'll still have court coverage between 9 and 3. So that's that. Should I do this today or save it?
What is it? Oh, boy. How long do we have to break?
Pretty quick.
We should save it till tomorrow.
Oh, darn it. We'll save it till... So make sure you're listening tomorrow.
It's under... It's under... it's unmissable. It really is this story.
It's True TV.
How about this? Every day Scotty J. smokes, the next day he is not allowed to drive to work. He must take public transit. That's not a bad idea.
But how do we know? Because Scotty likes to lie. Is he still in here?
Well, that's the thing is, that's why we have to really hold his feet to the fire. Feet to the fire, no pun intended, because it's like it's not that he lies, it's just that he doesn't volunteer
He dances around the truth.
And, like, he never, like, you could think he didn't volunteer yesterday. He took the patch off and smoked four times. So, but see, these are all great ideas. We'll have to think about, like, what is most unpleasant to Scotty J? What is it, when the idea of what is most distasteful to him? We're close to it with Silverado, public transit. We're getting all of these. Tim Riley, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh.
And like that, he's gone. Back at 4, 5, 6, and 7. We should break, I guess. Back after this, we'll get more of your phone calls. We'll get as many calls as we can before the top of the show here. So you hang tight. It's 503-733-2970. Stay there. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Don't go anywhere. All right, it's the Rick Emerson radio program. We now enter the saddest part of the broadcast today, final segment of the show. Like is up next, Don and Mike at 7. So do we know when Jiminy Click, do we figure out a day for him, or is that just in the future? I'm sorry, Carl Click?
Yeah, we're working on it for the near future.
So Scotty J has put his stop smoking future in the hands of we, the Rick Emerson faithful. We've got this, Rick. You just asked, what would Scotty J hate the most? This is from our good friend Todd the Corpse. Here's my humble suggestion. For every cigarette that Scotty J smokes, he gets a kiss planted on him by Bob, the gay bread truck driver. That's a great idea. Oh, right there. Listen to that reaction. Hold on.
I think we might have found it.
Look at that expression.
I'm serious. Sorry.
Yes?
I can't even comment on that.
Why not, Scotty?
I'm just not into...
Perhaps if you were...
The man-on-man kissing thing.
Well, you're also not into smoking.
You're right.
So I think we found two things that go well together.
And the Max thing, that would blow, especially if it was winter.
If you were having... Well, it doesn't matter, right? Because you're going to quit smoking.
Right.
There you go. You just heard him. It doesn't matter because he's going to quit smoking.
Okay.
It has to be... The whole point is, it's got to be something that you don't want to happen. That's the whole point of having it be aversion therapy. I like that idea. All we need to find now is a man who wants to come in and kiss you.
Ooh. Well, we need to meet him first.
Just listen, can you pot his mic up just as loud as it'll go? All we have to find now is a man who will come in and kiss you.
No.
See? Right there. Okay. Fantastic.
All right,
well, we're going to make that idea A, and unless something unless something comes along and knocks it off. That's going to be the go-to idea. B will be public transit. Gay kiss. Public transit. All right, fantastic.
So we need to, the next step, well, of course, with him quitting smoking.
We need to audition gay men.
Audition gay men.
Audition gay men who will come in and volunteer to kiss Scotty each time he smokes. That's fantastic.
For, and like the amount of kids, like if Scotty has four cigarettes, then he gets four kisses. And you know what? They should be forehead kisses.
What is the worst kind? Okay, what's the worst kind of kiss for Scott? Kiss on the back of your neck.
No, on the back
of
your side.
Hold on. No, this is so great. No, this is so great, Sarah. Really, I know we're not hugging people, but really, this is almost a hug moment, Sarah, because this is, I feel so great that we've got this idea. So, Sarah, let's you and I take turns here. Let's watch Scotty. We're going to watch Scotty's facial expression.
Okay.
And we should take turns talking about the kind of kiss he could receive, and we will gauge by his reaction what kind of kiss it would be.
Okay.
So I'll start. I'll say that. A gentle kiss from another man on the back of your neck.
It's not going to happen.
Oh, you know, okay. This is not your call. All right,
slightly
Sarah.
Slightly open
next.
Lips, no tongue.
Oh, no.
On your earlobe.
Oh, God.
Now that seems to be worse. How about this one? Just a feathery, soft brush of his lips across your forehead.
Feathery, soft.
What about a gentle parting of the hair on the top of your head?
Oh.
Big smack.
You know what? I might be a spokesman for the community, but I'm just not into that man-on-man kissing.
It doesn't matter because you're not going to smoke, right?
Right.
Okay, there you go. That's the right answer.
Maybe there's a better solution. Like, I like that.
How about
treatment from the Orient?
How about a, let's see. How about this? How about a kiss on the cheek with just, no, listen to me now. Just a kiss on the cheek with just a gentle squeeze of the shoulders at the same time.
Now, can I blow my cheek out and put my tongue there?
No. And you're not allowed. And you're not allowed to resist or
why
fight.
Why do you want to put your tongue there?
You're not allowed to resist
the
or fight.
Moving the eyeball thing. You never saw that where somebody simulated.
Okay. How about instead of kissing, you gently hold hands for 5 minutes?
That's great. Okay. Yeah. What would you prefer? Would you prefer a kiss on the neck or that you just have to hold hands for 5 minutes?
Probably a kiss on the neck.
Okay. Fair enough.
Quicker and faster.
And we'll make sure that it's not a lingering kiss and there'll be no tongue. His tongue won't touch your neck. The neck really seems to be... Okay, let's do this. I'll do that and then you do the... we're doing a little elimination here. Okay. Just imagine this on your neck, another man. Yeah, okay.
Well, at least that's quick.
All right, now.
Painless.
All right, what about slowly leaning forward? Lips parted, slow placement of your earlobe in between them, and a little.
I don't know which do you think is getting the worst reaction?
This guy's gonna like lick my earlobe.
No, it's just but gently
no
parted
tongue.
Lips. No tongue, but just gently parted.
But
lips.
We'll kind of there will be a little bit of a sucking in action.
Slightly, yeah.
Just slight suck.
Oh, gross.
Okay,
yeah.
It's got to be the ear. It's got to be the on the ear. Oh, okay.
I don't even think I've done that. With a woman, let alone a man, doing that to my ear.
Your life just becomes sadder by the day. There's so many things that become clear to me now with every passing moment. All right. So I think really barring any other sort of miraculous inspiration for the heavens, I think we found our deterrent.
I don't think so. There's probably millions of neat things out there.
Well, too bad we don't have time to take any of these
I know.
Calls.
It's too bad we're out of time. All we have to do the gentle ear kiss for now.
Just think, we could start auditioning our gay men today. Well, you know, there's tomorrow for that. Oh, Leg, we've already got volunteers. Oh, that's fantastic. All right. It's 5:03. How long do we have till the music starts here?
30 seconds.
That's too bad. Well, let's just take this bank of calls and see what they think of that
punishment.
Let's do it. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. What do you think about using that deterrent for Scotty?
Actually, I like all that. I was going to say having him come in a dress or something like that, but you're getting such a good reaction from the kissing.
It's genius. All right.
Is it possible to have him raise up his foot in the back?
Flip it up like Mary Tyler Moore?
Slowly lift the knee, you know.
All right. Thank you, sir. Real quickly, hi, Rick Emerson Show. What do you think of this deterrent for Scotty?
Why pick on gay guys? That's all I'm saying.
why punish the gay community so?
Two other suggestions, like send him down with your voice recorder from Super Digital. And have him ask people on the streets when he's sober if they want to see his guns.
No. Thank you. Hi, one more.
It's not a gay punishment. It's the fact that it makes Scotty squeamish.
That's the whole point. If Scotty were not narrow-minded, it wouldn't be a punishment.
Exactly.
Isn't that right, Scotty? Hoist
by
ye own petard. Isn't that right, sweetie? Buttercup. Sugar.
You're kind of weird right now.
You know, but it's a big red button. All right. Well, join us tomorrow when we'll begin auditioning gay kissers for Scotty.
Or other ideas.
No. We'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Let the Bastards Grind It Down. Do try to help the retarded. Watch out for snakes. See you tomorrow. Bye.